It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, the live Halloween episode.
Plan 9 from outer space, because the first 8 plans were bad ideas.
I love you, Paul. I'm Sean.
I'm Julia.
I'm Paul.
I'm Rachel.
Well, in any case, apologize for how late this is. Google was giving us a lot of trouble. We found out what the problem was, and it's that Google was evil and did not bring up the invite participants option until we recreated a whole list thing. So that's why it's taken a while for us to get this out. We're supposed to start at 8:30, but now we're starting at 9:16, and we're going to have a good time. So we're going to just dive right in to this. Just a couple of things. You can send us questions at any point in time during the show. You can do that via our Twitter account, at Skiffy and Fanty. You could also send them via the Q&A thingy on the Google Plus page. I don't know what it looks like from the viewer's perspective, but if you go to the main page for our Hangout, you'll see the little Q&A thingy-mabobber right there. You can send questions that way, or just send it via Twitter if you like. We'll take any question, no matter how silly. So we'll keep an eye out on them. We'll do a big Q&A section at the end if we got any questions. So we just start.
We might just guerrilla answer questions in the middle of things too. You just never know.
You never know. If we get like 5,000 questions, we'll have to.
We'll have to. We'll just be flexible.
Inevitable. So on that note, we should mention what we're all drinking, because I will probably run out of whatever I'm drinking very soon, given how frustrated I am with Google right now. So we will start with you, Julia. What are you drinking?
So as you all know, I just recently got married and I had a wedding reception and I got this beautiful set of crystal black wine goblets. And I thought, what better time to inaugurate them than Halloween? So I am drinking Krabby's alcoholic ginger beer out of a black wine goblet.
You look so evil. it's good times. All right, Paul, what about you?
I am keeping in with the season. I have a Summit Oktoberfest beer. And also Drake's Yodels, which have nothing to do with the beer, but I mentioned them anyway because Drake's are awesome.
Fair enough, fair enough. All right, Rachel, what about you? We can't hear anything you're saying.
You are quiet.
I'm never quiet. You just need to listen harder. So I'm drinking Angry Orchard Cider.
Of course, good choice.
Yeah.
Angry Orchard's pretty good. My favorite is currently Woodchuck, though, Fall Harvest.
Oh, because see, these guys, okay, so this is the fall, the cinnamon one.
The sinful, yeah.
It's the sinful, and then the store that I went to just now also had ginger, so I'm like,
ooh, wow.
Yeah, see, this is my bottle. It's I didn't know such a thing existed, but it is alcoholic ginger beer.
Yeah, I got to have some at Worldcon. It's amazing.
It is fantastic. I'm a big fan.
So I'm about to upstage everybody, because I made my own concoction, which I am
calling... What the hell is that?
Okay.
Oh, my God.
It'll be a little difficult because my camera kind of sucks.
That's plan 10 from outer space.
That might have been like plan 7, which accidentally killed everyone before they made plan 8.
So I'm calling it a bloody pumpkin. very fitting for this. Now, hold on. I can see where you're going. So this took a little bit of creating. So it has whatever vodka I had on hand. So I've got like Trotsky vodka or something. I don't know what brand it is. It's some sort of socialist brand. And so I started with vodka, but then I had a little bit of a regular apple cider. I took some pumpkin caramel, melted it into the apple cider, put that in the freezer, mixed in the vodka later, and then put some ice in, and then put a spring of 100% pure cranberry juice at the top, and that's what you ended up with. And it is freaking delicious.
That looks terrifying.
It does look terrifying, especially in that golden light. It kind of looks like... looks like... Sean, are you sure it's delicious?
Are you going to be okay?
It was the cough of yum-yum.
I have a problem where stuff doesn't go down my throat correctly. And that's what happened. So yeah, so that's what I'm drinking. Assuming I can actually drink it, because it didn't go down my throat correctly. That was terrible. All right, it worked that time. So, shall we talk about this piece of crap movie?
Yeah, are we starting with likes or dislikes?
We have to start by describing what this movie is about.
That's a challenge.
Because what is Planet from Outer Space?
I can summarize this movie.
Okay, Julia, go for it.
So aliens have come down to Earth to reanimate the dead to stop people from Earth from making a bomb that will destroy the sun and the universe. And there's like fights and stuff and bad narration and flying saucers.
Yeah, that's a pretty good description. Also, like Dracula and
well, Dracula.
That explains the reanimated dead.
Dracula is in this movie, and Dracula's wife.
Vampyra. Yes, Vampyra is in this movie.
Besides, they're really zombies, and we're getting into our likes or dislikes. They're not Dracula.
Okay. I'm sorry, Rachel, you had a comment you really wanted
to
make.
Oh, no, I was like, don't forget that it's composed of at least 33% stock footage.
Yeah, that again, we're getting to likes and dislikes.
Wait, really?
Some of the best shot footage in the movie!
So, wow. yeah, when we get into likes and dislikes, we'll discuss a lot about how this movie was made.
Well, we should probably get started with that right this second. So, since this is probably, I think it's fair to say, considered the single worst science fiction / horror / fantasy / bizarre concoction of conspiracy theories and weird narrative practices ever, we should probably start with likes and end on a dislike. Because that's just the way we roll. So why don't we start with you, Julia. First like, go.
My first like is that this movie has Bela Lugosi in it. And it doesn't really matter what Bela Lugosi does. He can just like kind of wander around silently and flip a cape, and he's awesome.
Which he does.
Yes. I'm not going to say any more than that because it will get into my dislike. But my first like is that Bela Lugosi is in this movie.
He does have some good moments before he becomes a zombie. When he gets to act without words.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. No, he's a zombie throughout.
No, he's not. No, he starts out at his wife's funeral.
Right.
And he's just
really
an old man.
Yeah.
And he wanders away from his home, never to return again.
Oh, right. That's
when he's a zombie.
Let's not forget the ever beautiful flower she had planted with her own hands became nothing more than the lost roses of her cheeks.
This is, of course, getting into more dislikes and likes.
We're getting rather mad at meta that way.
All right. We'll save it because this is going to lead us down some very bad avenues. So why don't we go to you, Paul. First like, go.
It's very simple because I have it on the list as well. Yay for Bela Lugosi as the dead old man. Because, well, it is Bela Lugosi. It was his last role. It was good to see him. Even though he was ill-used and died in the middle of filming, it was good to see him.
It's actually worse than that, but we'll get into that in my dislikes.
Okay. My knowledge of this film may not be as comprehensive as yours, Julia. I look forward to hearing what you have to say about that. But yes, so I will second Julia. Yay for Bela Lugosi.
I like how Paul describes him as Bela Lugosi as the dead old man. Like, clearly the greatest acting performance and role for Bela Lugosi in the history of Bela Lugosi's career. The dead old man.
He's not dead for all of it.
He's not dead yet.
He's not dead yet. Sorry. Let me correctly state what his actual role is. It is the soon-to-be dead who will be known as the dead old man. Because he starts the first couple minutes. He's at least
alive. Then that's it. Then he's this creepy dead old man until he starts getting replaced with stock footage and stuff.
Oh, goodness. That's so just...
His credited role, just to note, is Ghoul Man.
Ghoul Man. Ghoul Man.
Yes.
That's great.
We'll have more to say on this in the dislike section.
Clearly.
It's marginally better than the dead old man. But in any case, Rachel, what's your first like?
So my first like is actually not necessarily about the film itself, but it's because I have watched this movie many, many times, but I felt like I should watch it again today, and so I did on YouTube. And when I watched it on YouTube, the advertisement that came before it, the movie, was for adult diapers, and I thought that was beautifully prescient.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Are you sure you weren't watching a Sean Connery movie?
They were orange. They were watching it in pastel packaging.
Nope. Wrong color for Sean. Nice.
No. If there was Sean Connery in this, I'd actually get to play Sean Connery in the skit. But and I might actually have gone as Sean Connery from Zardoz for Halloween. Instead, I went as an angel, obviously.
So. Instead, I'm the only one in costume.
Hey, I'm dressed as a grad student. Yeah, see?
I have my carnival mask, but you can't see it because I don't have a camera.
Yeah, whereas I actually am a lolcat. You can see my K-Thanks spy, my cheeseburger.
I love you, Julia. That's great.
I've even got a tail. I don't know if the tail will show up. Like, I don't know if I can get
it. You have a tail. Look at that little tail.
So if we run after it, that would be chasing the tail.
Oh, Paul. All
Julia
right.
likes me. She won't be upset about that.
Well, in any case, I guess I should go to my first like.
You should.
I will say that despite the fact that this movie never matches the music that is presented, I did like the 1950s suspense music because it was you know, it was all those like discordant tones, you know, the and like the, you know, building up of the tension in the music. I mean, the film itself never actually matches what the music does, but at least the music was kind of good for a 1950s film, so it was, you know, 1959s was pretty good. I enjoyed the music. Just wish the film had gone on with the music. So, all right, why don't we jump on to our first dislike then, Julia?
So, Bela Lugosi. Turns out, a few years previously, Bela Lugosi, who was friends with Ed Wood, the director of this movie, had started working with him on a different film, The Ghoul Goes West. And they had done some, like, random scenes, silent film scenes, of, like, him walking outside of one of the producer's houses, and him in a graveyard flipping a cape, and some other stuff. And that was all that they had left. And Bela Lugosi was dead by the time Ed Wood was putting together Plan 9 from Outer Space. Like, he wasn't dead at the very beginning. I think he was still alive for part of it. And so Ed Wood was like, we'll use the stock footage that we shot for Ghoul Goes West, and we'll, like, find a reason to put it in there. But then Bela Lugosi died. And so then, since they had used some of it, they were like, well, we'll just get, like, my wife's chiropractor to pretend to be Bela Lugosi. And that's why, like, half the time when he has a cape over his face, it's because it's his chiropractor, not Bela Lugosi, because Bela Lugosi is dead. So, like, this old man that's not an old man, but in fact a chiropractor who doesn't look anything like Bela Lugosi is, like, wandering through with a cape over his face because he's dead, being like, I'm really Bela Lugosi, I swear. And also, since this was originally filmed for a movie that had nothing to do with outer space, that's why Bela Lugosi is like a vampire. And they were like, oh, well, I guess we have this vampire footage, so we'll just like kind of make that work with aliens. And sure, it'll happen. No.
I'm so confused by, like, so he's a chiropractor, but yet he walks in a way that clearly a chiropractor would never tell someone to walk. Because he's just asking for back trouble.
It's, yeah, because he's trying to pretend to be shorter than he is and Bela Lugosi. He's got to hold a cape over his face so that you can't tell that it's not Bela Lugosi, except you totally can, and pretend to be shorter because he's taller than Bela Lugosi.
It's so lazy, though.
It's not lazy. It's using so little. Using
it's resourceful.
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of tools at his disposal.
Okay.
Which is going to get into actually a like of mine, but that's a different thing.
We got to have a conversation about what is actually resourceful. So the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus was resourceful, right? They didn't even pretend that they were using the same actor in the roles. They just switched them up and
but
said,
"But they had a giant budget."
That is not a valid excuse.
Yes, it is.
No, because here's the thing. Bela Lugosi doesn't even need to be in half of this damn movie. They could have just killed the ghoul, had him get like bonked in the head like the big guy, and be done with it. And then they'd be like, oh, Bela Lugosi, guest star, done.
But then how would he scare the woman in the bedroom and end up being sent off in a burning flying saucer? None of the plot of this movie makes any sense.
No, it doesn't. It just, like, whatever. Whatever. All right, Paul. What about you?
Okay, my first dislike ties in a little bit with the Bela Lugosi. It's something that Rachel already mentioned. This movie uses a lot of stock footage. I mean, the best shot parts of this movie is the stock footage of the army, of the airplanes. And you see they've used the same stock footage over and over again. That plane flies past the Pentagon like five times. And the footage is not well integrated with that army captain. He's standing against this gray wall, and he's supposed to be right there when the army is shooting the guns, and the guns aren't really hitting the flying saucer. It's just awful stock footage. And now I understand in some ways a lot of the Bela Lugosi stuff was quote unquote stock footage from this previous film project. It just is not well integrated. And you can tell every time they use the army stock footage because it's better film quality, which is kind of scary.
This is the second film we have watched in which the military is incapable of hitting relatively large objects with missiles. Except this film is not good, and the film we did watch happened to be good.
Which one are you thinking of?
It was Godzilla. Because when you shoot missiles at Godzilla, for some reason the missiles like fly around him, but they never hit Godzilla. Even though Godzilla is so big.
He's got a special rubbery force field.
Yes, I'm sure that's what does it. Yeah, he's got a rubber force field. In this case, I just like, they shoot...
Oh, you were going to say something else.
Oh, yeah, he's got a rubber everything. Oh. Yeah.
My dad's a guy, Rachel.
Yeah, you pervy person, you.
I was just going to note, I mean, with the... You can actually have movies that have stock footage that aren't, like, fucking terrible. But if you have watched much of Ed Wood's films, and I've watched a few because I used to watch bad movies. Well, I still watch bad movies on purpose, just, you know, only if people give money to charity.
Or you're here for us.
Yeah, but the thing you have to realize about Ed Wood is he is a fucking terrible editor. Terrible. I mean, that man was not good at anything. Like, couldn't write scripts, couldn't edit, obviously could not direct an actor to save anyone's life. So, yeah, that's just... I mean, there are so many reasons that this film has won the Golden Turkey Award so many times.
Well, tell us, Rachel, why did it not work for you this time for your first dislike?
So my first dislike is, I mean, I have love in my heart for, you know, the make it work stuff and people doing things with no budget and cheap ass sets. But the cheap ass sets in Plan 9 were just way too cheap ass. And I'm talking in particular for the airplane cockpit that appears to have a shower curtain.
Oh, God, yes, that one.
That's pretty amazing. All the sets that are constructed and aren't just like somebody's house are uniformly terrible. But then the crypt that Bela Lugosi's body goes in, which is approximately the size of a Happy Meal. Like, did they fold him up and insert him?
It's got like a cardboard door.
Yeah. cross at the top that's slightly uneven, you know. and then the tombstones.
Yeah, because they're
so tiny.
Yeah, I wondered about that too. Like, these are the smallest tombstones I've ever seen. And I've lived next to cemeteries, I know.
Well, and some, I mean, like, the one that's in one of the graves that like collapses in, like, that one was actually pretty thick, but there were some of them where it looks like you can just tell it was made out of like plywood. It's so bad.
The plane cockpit was the one that drove me nuts because I don't think they
podium shakes. It's like, what the hell? You can tell.
Well, okay, there's that. But the thing for me that drove me nuts about it was I think they touched what was supposed to pass for like the joystick / steering wheel maybe a couple times in the whole time. But mostly they just sat there. like this is in 1959. Like, I'm pretty sure autopilot at that time, if it existed, was really basic. Super basic, like fly straight. Might have been autopilot. Maybe. It would have been, I don't even think they had autopilot in 1959, right? So, like, they have these, like, black, like, I don't even know what you call them. Like they have a thing, so, like, I'm gonna mime it, right? Like, they have, like, a thing, and they're like, oh. And then they just, like, touch it. And, like, that would be it. That would all they would do. Like, I'm flying a plane now.
You know why, Sean? Because in the first scene we see that, and in the explosion and things get rocked, you see the right guy's podium go off kilter, like almost breaks in half. So they didn't touch it because they're afraid if they touched it, they would break it. It was so cheap. So
they were made out of Happy Meals too.
Well, in any case, it's so ridiculous because, like, at least they could have made cheap sets that look like they were sets, but I just never believed they were in an airplane cockpit at any point. Like, I don't even know if they knew that was where they were supposed to be.
But you believed those flying saucers.
No. And that'll be
amazing.
That's going to be something that is going to be my first dislike, which
Go
is
for it.
Flying saucers in this movie are fucking ridiculous. They are some of the most cheap, like, I'm sorry, it's 1959, the economy is booming, it's like 2% or 3% like unemployment rate. Like, there is no excuse to make a movie where the flying saucers are so obviously like tinfoil garbage, like made out of old hubcaps, right, and like strung up on like string you could buy at what would have been Walmart at the time, you know. Like, and there's like some guy, like, it's just like some guy like doing like really like bad, like a guy who failed like the marionette school, right? He like flunked out because he couldn't hold anything straight, and that's what they got. They got that guy, so like your things would like fly around and they're just bouncing everywhere, and they're the most ridiculous things. Is that like no point is any of this believable? Like, these are the flying saucers. They're like wobbling about. They can't fly straight worth a damn. And these are the things that are, like, raising the dead and flying about and are, like, easily... Like, no, none of that's believable. Come on. Like,
that's how they're able to dodge the shooting of the army because of that wobbling.
They don't even dodge anything. They just stay still. And apparently...
Well, no, there's the one that flies back and forth like this.
Like it's on a pendulum?
Yeah. It's literally... They had, like, fishing poles.
Yep.
Like, it's 1959. It's not that long until Star Wars, right?
Yeah, but John,
it's really not. And I'm not expecting Star Wars level effects. But 8 years before, we had a film, which I'm going to talk about later, The Day the Earth Stood Still, which had fairly limited effects, but the effects were decent enough for the time and mostly hold up. Like, I just... This movie is... Like,
so here's a question I have for you, Sean.
Okay.
Do you think the quality of this movie, on average, and that includes like direction, sets, acting, special effects, everything, is better or worse than Birdemic?
Oh.
Ooh, there's your next dissertation right there. Compare and contrast.
I love you, Rachel.
Chapter one.
I think this movie is just slightly better than
Birdemic. Yeah, I think this movie is actually a bit better than Birdemic, and on multiple levels. Like, I think it has, for given the stuff that they have to work with, I think it has better special effects. I think it has better acting, better sound quality and production, and just, like, Birdemic might beat it on script. I'm not sure.
No.
Well,
no,
I think they're
tied on script. They're tied
on script. They might be tied on script.
Because,
I think that Plan 9 is actually better than Birdemic. And, like, part of that is that Ed Wood might not have done a lot of things well, but he did have some production values that were okay.
I'm not sure that that counts because, like...
he had Bela Lugosi.
Okay, look. Yep. I'll just explain why Birdemic's not as good. And the reason why it's not as good is that, like, despite the fact that this film, like, doesn't make any sense, it does exist in a time in which its message that it does try to present in a completely nonsensical way makes some vague notion of sort of sense. But not really. But Birdemic, like, has characters trying to, like, convert their friends into, like, environmentalists, and then, like, random, like, gray-haired, bearded environmentalist dudes talking about seagulls in random beaches after the apocalypse. Like,
Birdemic is worried about climate change the same way that Plan 9 from Outer Space is worried about the H-bomb.
Yeah, they're both message movies.
Except that despite the fact that Plan 9 is terrible... it is just barely more subtle in its message than Birdemic, which has a guy who is by far the most ill-equipped human being to talk about anything above the level of, like, how to construct, like, maybe, like, a three-piece Lego set, right? Talking about how to solve the world's environmental problems. And then convincing his friends by making them go watch An Inconvenient Truth that if they just see this movie, by some genius magic, they will be able to, like, become environmentalists. And then you all buy Priuses, and, like, clearly this is what's going to solve the world.
Sean?
Whereas, yeah, yes?
Explode the sunlight here. Explode the sunlight all over the universe.
Yeah.
So I think your science argument is not really going to work.
This movie's not about science.
It tries to be.
It does the 1950s golden age, like, as you know, Bob, random science jargon that Star Trek would do much better the next decade.
But its key point is that the aliens are really worried that we are going to explode the sunlight. And they better just destroy our planet to stop that from happening.
Right, which is an allegory for the concerns that a movie like The Day the Earth Stood Still would deal with in a more nuanced way about the concerns about destroying the whole world by nuclear war.
Wow.
In 1959, it's more pronounced. So it makes sense why this film exists in 1959, whereas it makes no sense why Birdemic exists.
Because climate change is an issue that's relevant now.
Yeah, but Day After Tomorrow did it better than Birdemic. Birdemic
that's
is borrowing...
a low bar!
Okay,
Day
first
After
off,
Tomorrow.
First off, okay, we've got to defend this because this is important.
I like how we're going to have a fight now about Birdemic. Okay. You know, I just like to state for the record that Ken Liu is on my side.
Well, that's fine, but Ken Liu's wrong. And
Ken Liu is totally right. Birdemic is awesome.
That's it. Day After Tomorrow is better than Birdemic for many, many reasons. Least of all because it is dealing with an idea that is only 30 years old, whereas Birdemic is dealing with something that came from a Hitchcock movie something like 40 or 50 years before it, where it's just literally stealing someone else's plot and then, like, randomly throwing in Al Gore because, of course, if you throw in Al Gore, automatically it's an environmental movie. Whereas Day After Tomorrow doesn't even bother doing that. It just has the Earth go to shit and say, well, here we go. Now we have wolves and Jake Gyllenhaal stuck in a library. That's great. So it's better. Because it's slightly more current.
All right. So should we move on to our... our
second like?
Is that what we're on next?
I think we are, yes. And so,
Julia.
Julia.
My second like is the horrible, horrible narration in this movie.
That's a like?
It's also a dislike. I think all my likes are also going to be dislikes. Because it's so ridiculous, it's so over the top. But you never have to worry about where you are in this movie, because if you get lost, like you zone out for a while, eventually he'll come back and tell you, well, we have just witnessed the old man's wife's funeral, and now he is going to the house where they used to live, but it makes him sad, so he will leave. And you're like, oh, okay, I'm back, I know what's happening now.
That was at the beginning of the movie, though.
Yeah, but then, like, later he'll be like, aliens have come down to Earth to reanimate the dead.
You're, like, delivering this with way too much, like, I don't know.
Authenticity?
It needs to be like, aliens have come down to Earth and are raising the dead.
As they do.
Look at my hair, it's made out of plastic. Curl.
What is with his hair? It's unnatural.
That is plan 7 from outer space.
That was the plan. Ruin the world by giving guys bad haircuts.
He's like the little girl who has a little curl right in the middle of his forehead.
Yes! That's what she grew up to be, Criswell.
Okay, can we pause for a second and actually address this? Because this film is called Plan 9 from Outer Space, and since we've already determined that Plan 7 was bad hairdos, right? Like, what were the other 8?
That actually gets into one of my likes.
We've broken Paul.
But he said it was one of his likes, which means he could talk about it as his like for this time.
I can.
Go for it, Paul.
Okay, the fact that this is Plan 9 is one of my likes of this movie. I mean, they even discuss it in the middle of the film because, I paid way too much attention watching the film. And they talk about, well, what should we do? It's a, we'll use Plan 9. It's not that they've now... No, I bought this on Netflix. I got this on Netflix, and it incorrectly says about the first 8 plans failing. And that's not right. It's actually that they choose, and apparently have a suite of plans, they choose Plan 9. Apparently these aliens have a set number of different possible plans to deal with alien planets, and in this case, Plan 9 is reanimate the dead. We are not told what plans 1 through 8 are. We don't know how many plans there are beyond 9. There could be 100. There could be 10. There could be 1,000,000. But we know they're going to use Plan 9 for the Earth. And I thought that was so great because that's a tiny little bit of interesting world building. Made me wonder, what the hell are the other plans? And why didn't they use those?
So they basically have like a big football playbook.
Yes. They have a playbook. They have a football playbook that we're going to use Plan 9. We'll reanimate the dead. That'll get the Earth to stop, not use the solar bomb.
Well, and like it does seem like they did try to talk to Earth people beforehand. Like they sent that answering machine message to the army.
And that gets into one of my dislikes. But that's a different thing. But yeah, I appreciate that it's Plan 9 because they had other plans, but they decided to go with this one. Which doesn't say much about the judgment of the aliens, but that's beside the point.
Also, the whole idea that they're going to use Plan 9, and they're like, yeah, and they have to report to their superior, and he's like, how's it going? And they're like, well, we've got 3 reanimated corpses. And he's like, that's probably not actually enough.
Yeah.
That's right. He says, I'm taking your other ships.
Yep.
Because you've only raised 3 undead.
Yep. Here's the Netflix envelope. After the embarrassing failure of the first 8 plans, a group of evil aliens enacts Plan 9, resurrecting them to take over the Earth. Wrong! They didn't have 8 plans that failed. They just chose number 9.
Maybe Plan 3 was like Italian guys on little scooters going, brr, ciao.
All right, so that's Plan 3?
Yes, that's Plan 3. There you go.
So I'm making this a rule because we've got plenty of time for this, but we need to fill out all of the plans so we know what all 9 plans are. So we have Plan 3 right now is Italian guys on scooters going, meh. Plan 7 is bad hair. Plan 9 is zombies.
Plan 8 is your drink, Sean, because I already said that at the beginning.
Okay, my drink, Bloody Pumpkin. Okay. So yeah, so by the time we're done with this, we need to have all. But let's save Plan 1. We'll save that for a listener.
I was gonna say, is somebody writing this down?
I am. I'm keeping an eye. I don't know how I'm gonna put Italian guys on scooters going on my thing, but I guess I could just find a way to represent that. Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't
they're
forget
supposed
that
to say
they have
chow,
to say chow.
Yeah, chow.
Chow. And they also chow. Go. No? Okay.
Chow. Yeah, the scooters go.
Yeah, me.
The scooters sound like. Effects.
They sound like goats? Is that what they sound like?
A little like sheep, a little like an electronic buzzer. I'm not really sure.
Just imagining like walking through campus at the University of Florida and like all of these people on scooters going.
Oh god.
I think we broke Rachel.
We broke Rachel now.
Oh god, I gotta turn on my ceiling fan into a pot.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great, guys. So great. So good. We've got plenty of plans. So for one of the listeners, you can come up with and use the Q&A feature one of the plans for plan 9, the 9 plans. And we'll put that on our list, and I'll include that in the show notes for when this goes up on the podcast form. So that's great. So, Rachel, you need to tell us about your second like.
So my second like would be the ruler. So, and that's his credited role. He doesn't have a name. He's just the ruler. And all I want to be like him because all he does is he sits at a desk surrounded by curtains because we can't afford real sets, and he's wearing a tabard, so I guess he's a LARPer, which is pretty awesome because I didn't know aliens LARPed. And then all he lives in a giant silver space breast. And all he does is he gestures. He's just like, send them in. No, 3 isn't enough. Go. Go. I want to be like him. I want to be as fabulous as the ruler.
I love the tabard. It has a halberd on it.
Yes!
Like, what the hell does that have to do with aliens? Why is there an earth weapon on this guy's tabard is what I wanted to know. Yet more unanswered Wobblerdoon questions from Plan 9 from Outer Space.
So Plan 27 is actually the LARPing halberd off of the ruler's tabard.
No, that would be, we don't have 27 plans. It stops at 9.
You don't know that. No, they
we don't know that.
9 out of a whole book of plans.
We can do this rules of acquisition style.
I do what I want. Numbers.
Okay, look, that's plan 5, LARPing with a halberd.
No.
I like how Sean's just like arbitrarily changing the numbers of the plans.
There are 9, not 27.
No, there are.
Let's keep this reasonable for a 2.5-hour podcast, okay? No, you can have number 5.
It's the rules of acquisition. And then, like, you know, what we should do is every podcast, we should come up with another plan from outer space. Just one.
Okay, after we fill out the 9, we can do that, and we can go with your Ferengi rules.
I like the Ferengi rules.
That you're like the liberal arts guy, and you're like, no, it will be the thing. And I'm like, yeah, you know.
As you well know, people who are in the liberal arts are all fascists.
Wow.
Is that what your costume is?
Yes.
All right. Fascist.
Okay, so I'm going to go to my second like before Rachel explodes and needs to like go douse her body in ice.
Again.
Because she's so red right now.
Oh. Are you okay, Rachel?
She's good. She's good.
Okay,
she's good.
Go ahead, Sean.
So I'm just going to say that normally I wouldn't find this funny and find it enjoyable, but I did find the 1950s sexism in this hilarious. Because in retrospect, it's so absurd as to be kind of like almost priceless. So like, for example, there are two moments that are like they're not terribly subtle. One's more subtle than the other. So, like, the one moment when the pilot goes back and he's talking to his wife and he's like, you need to go because there's weird stuff happening in the cemetery, which is, like, across the street, and you need to go with your mom. And she's like, I'm not going to go with my mom. I'm going to stay locked up in the house, and that's no biggie deal. And it's, like, just the casualness with it, which she's willing to be, like, locked up in a house, and it's not a big deal. Also, she hugs pillows, apparently, which is, I guess, a useful tool. And then, of course, the other one is this great piece of dialogue which comes from the alien who's explaining how his alien species views life. And he says, and I'm quoting directly, as Rachel hugs her pillow. That's great.
Rachel hugs her pillow.
Yeah. In my land, women are for advancing the race, not for fighting man's battles. Life is not so expansive on my planet. We don't cling to it like you do. Our entire aim is for the development of our planet. So I like this subtle nod to women are just for making babies. And it's just so just like this is the 1950s, and it's total nonsense, and it's ridiculous. And the men are these like big old strapping lads who want to punch and fight all the time, and the women are like, I want to be locked up in a cellar and just keep me there safe from the zombies, and it'd be fine. I just found it hilarious. Like, I couldn't stop laughing. I realized that, like, if this were today, it would not be funny, but it's 1959, and it's just absurd.
And not to mention, she wants to go with them, but she winds up getting locked up in the car. It is absurd. I actually have it as a dislike because I didn't find it absurd. I found it annoying, and I figured Julia would be the better person to address the women problems in this movie than I would. I just note that I see them, and I thank Julia for helping bring me to that.
Is the Bechdel crusher going to crush me on this one?
Well, are we into our next dislike?
We are.
I was going to talk about the dialogue and the narration, but I guess I'll go into the women instead. Yeah, so it is on my list. And I agree with you that it's kind of funny, because everything in this movie is so bad that it's all kind of funny. But it's also not kind of funny because it really does perpetuate the whole idea. And 1959 is almost 1960, and 1960 is the start of a decade where it's like famous for the civil rights movement and all that stuff. So, you know, it's not like women hadn't ever had voices or other roles in history before that. It's not like women in 1959 didn't have other roles. But this movie does perpetuate the idea that they shouldn't, and that makes me sad. Because it is a given that, like, basically women are there to have wastes that shouldn't be possible.
Oh my God, yes.
But I'll get into that in a different section. And, like, basically be pretty damsels in distress, except for the alien woman who is allowed to, like, go out and do alien things, although she's inept, so I don't know how much that actually helps.
And she gets slapped down. Later.
Yeah, she gets slapped down as well. So, like, women really aren't allowed to have any kind of real agency in this movie, and that's sad. And the idea is that women really are there just for making babies and, like, keeping the house clean and hugging pillows. And her line is like, the saucers are out there and the graveyard's over there, but I'll be locked up in there, which is a terrible line, but kind of amazing because it's so terrible. Like so many of the lines in this movie. But yeah, like it was just kind of like, oh, I'm sad that, you know, women aren't allowed to be people.
I guess that's fair. I don't know. I just saw it as it's such deep time, and that in a kind of retrospective way, looking back and just thinking about
that time, there were women who were doing things and they had agency and they were doing awesome things. And the idea that that was a time when we thought women should be only doing certain things is believing the hype that's perpetuated by the people who felt that way. And there are people who feel that way now. So, like, what if you look back at things from now, 40 years from now, and say, like, oh, the Dugars, you know, like, that's a time capsule, because back in the 2000s, like, people were supposed to only have very deep fundamentalist Christian values and not be allowed to touch their dates who were chosen by their fathers before they were married. Those people exist, and they have a TV show. But that's not actually the reality of the entire world, and it's not a reality I think is good.
No, it's certainly not. Don't even get me started on those people. They're like some sort of weird cult that somebody took out of a time machine. I mean, their beliefs are...
Somebody
they exist
now.
Take
them out of a time machine, though. They're now. They're,
right, no, I
they're,
know.
They exist in this modern world, and they're working with the things that we have in this modern world. So, like, these things aren't tied to a specific time period. They're tied to ideas that people have about how society should work.
True, ideas that themselves are old. They're antiquated
ideas. But if you look throughout history, like it's like the Cameron Hurley essay, "We Have Always Fought." If you look throughout history, there have always been women doing awesome things. There have always been women fighting. There have always been women who were respected by men.
Sure.
It's just that it's not always, and it's not all women, and right now it's still the same. Like, women are not all respected by men. Gamergate is a thing. The idea that, like, if you walk outside, you will get catcalled, that's a thing. You can get death threats and rape threats on the internet for saying that you wish that video games didn't have violence against women. Yay.
Yeah.
It's not tied to a time period, is what I'm saying. Like, the idea that in history, like, the idea of saying that back then there was a time when it was okay to do X isn't true. There were always people who were fighting that. There were always people like us who were saying, no, that's not okay. So if you say that that time was only full of people who say that it is okay, that's not true. And that perpetuates the idea that it's okay in some way.
That's certainly not what I'm not saying that that's... I'm saying that that was what the cultural narrative considered to be acceptable behavior, was that women stayed in the house and they did house things.
And what I'm saying is that the cultural narrative, there are different cultural narratives all the time, every time, yeah. And every time there are different cultural narratives.
But the dominant
one. Does anybody else want to actually like take this at all, or is it just going to be me?
I mean, it just sounds like it's kind of like the whole idea of trying to make history and culture as the march of progress, like, you know, we're so much more advanced now, just looking into the recent past, and yeah, see, women have it way better now, at least you aren't in 1950, which I'm so fucking tired of hearing, plus, you know, at least you're not in other country X, like,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's something I mentioned at one of the panels I was at Mile High Con last weekend, when we're talking about the Victorians and kind of the way, say, Renaissance and medieval culture was viewed through their lens, where they perpetuated a lot of cultural ideals or ideas about those times that were not really that accurate because it made them look better, kind of like, you know, oh yeah, you know, girls got married when they were 12 back then, and that's not true. You know, historically, it's not true. So, I had a point, and I lost it, but there you go.
But yeah, I guess it's the idea that we look back on times, and we make it look like we want it to look to best reflect how we want to feel about now.
Yes.
So, it's easier to look back and say the 50s were a time when everybody thought that women shouldn't do anything but make babies, because that makes us feel better about now when women are allowed to do things that are more than just make babies, except that it erases all of the women who weren't doing that. It erases all the scientists. You know, it erases the people who were working on DNA research who existed, whose names got erased from the reports.
Yeah.
It erases all the women who did, like, lots of work for the war in World War II, who were then kind of like being told you can't do that anymore, you have to go and make babies, but I guarantee you not all of them were doing that.
Sure.
And just like in, if you look back at like the 1850s, people will be like, well, back then it was perfectly fine to own slaves. Well, for some people who thought that slavery was a good idea, yes. For a lot of people, including, I'm pretty sure, every slave, and a lot of people who were abolitionists, who were really strong in the abolitionist movement, no. And to assume that the entire time period says, like, slavery is okay is inaccurate. It's wrong. And it erases the fact that people are complex and progress is complex.
I don't disagree.
So I guess I just basically always rebel against the idea that anything is a product of its time.
Okay. All right.
Because I'm sure we can find movies made in 1959 that have much better, like, women having agency in them.
Including The Day the Earth Stood Still, in which it has a single mother who, for the most part, does the best she can. You know, it's not perfect, but does a much better job than any of the women that are in this movie. in terms of the representation. Sorry, I didn't want to make it seem like she's just a better woman. That's
no, like... no, that's I'm not. Anyway, this went to a very serious place that I wasn't actually expecting to go tonight. So maybe we should bring it back to the, hey, let's talk about terrible dialogue.
Yes, Paul, why don't we go to your second dislike?
My second dislike is the terrible voiceover. It's not even that the actor is bad at the beginning and the end. It's not even that the voiceover is one of the worst monotone voiceovers I have ever heard. I'm no actor, but I think I could do a better job than this guy could. I don't know who the actor's name is. It's the fact that it is so freaking unnecessary. He tells us stuff we're seeing on the screen or just happened, and that anybody with more than 5 brain cells and 4 of them working at one time could actually figure out. It's like, it doesn't give us any new information. It doesn't give us an additional channel of insight into what's happening. It just tells us what we're seeing. It's so pointless. It's like, why have that there? Because I mean, otherwise you'd have long stretches of silent movie, maybe, but otherwise there's no point to the voiceover. Just, why is it there?
So this is related to my dislike, Paul, because I'm sure having been on many shows with me will know that one of my biggest pet peeves is having story read to me in a movie.
Yes, yes.
At least it wasn't on the screen while somebody read words to me.
That's a good point.
Which is pretty much the worst thing you could... The worst thing you could possibly do. Sorry, I had to cough, and I didn't want to do that on the podcast. Paul, I have the same thing. Because, like, he's literally, as you said, he is saying things to us that are being shown to us. So, like, for example, one of his dialogue is literally, unbeknownst to the mourners, his wife was watching him. And what does it show us? His wife watching him. But, like, how are we supposed to know? If he hadn't told us, how were we supposed to know that she was watching him, like, even though it showed us her watching him from the shadows? Like, there's just no way. I clearly could not have known that. It's just impossible.
Well, we might not have known that it was his wife, because the thing is that what we actually have is a random shot of Vampyra looking on. And Vampyra doesn't really look like, I don't know, the typical housewife.
Trophy wife!
That's true.
So the reason they did all the voiceover was because they had this silent footage of Bela Lugosi, and they wanted to tie it in with the talking footage of, you know, aliens and all this other stuff. And they didn't. They were like, we really want to use Bela Lugosi. We really want Bela Lugosi to have credit, and we want to use this footage that we have of him, so we have to make it work. So what can we do to tie it together? We'll have narration. And that's why you have narration. It's terrible. It's god-awful. But that's why it exists.
It's so bad.
It is so bad.
Oh, God.
I mean, there's a reason for it, but yeah, God.
I mean, it could be worse, though. It could have been worse where he's like, you know, and the man was upset, and then the man would walk in and go, I'm upset, right? That could have been the worst.
Well, no, it can't happen, though, because they don't have the talking footage. So it's all silent, so that's why he has to say, like, he sniffs the flower that his wife had planted when she was living.
I guess it could have said, the man was silent. It would have been, oh God.
That would only be good if they also had a shot of Bela Lugosi, like, turning and randomly looking straight at the camera, like.
That would have been ridiculous. That would have been
insane. The man was silent. Silent stare.
Silent stare.
That would have been the dialogue.
If you could have had, like, a frame from, like, a silent movie come up and it just said silent stare on it. All right, Rachel, what about you?
So I think we should take a moment to sit back and really consider Lieutenant John Harper and his terrible trigger and muzzle discipline.
How is that man even in the Army?
He's like, you, go over there!
Mike Colvin not approve.
Oh, God. Yeah. I'm more amazing every time you watch this movie, I swear.
He's the one that, like, rubs his neck with the muzzle of his gun, right?
Yes.
Yep. He's staring at the graveyard. He tilts his hat up with it at one point. He kind of does, like, this thing with it. Yeah. The police. It's the police lieutenant. He's sitting there, and he's, like, gesturing, like, talking with his hands, like, by pointing to the other cops with the gun, like this, like, you, go over there.
And they're all completely unperturbed by this, as though they've always had guns just randomly pointed at them.
Well, they probably have if they worked with him.
But my guess is when he was first a trainee, and so he was just, you know, like trainee John Harper, he had a terrible accident with his gun where he was, you know, gesturing wildly with it, and he shot off someone's testicle. And since that day, they took away his gun and they gave him, like, a cap gun. And nobody knows everyone knows it's a cap gun but him, because he thinks it's a real gun. But that way everyone knows they don't have to be afraid. That's my story.
That's a really weird backstory there, Rachel.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. All right. So let's switch to third like. Let's go to you, Julia. Third like.
Okay. So my third like, I have to keep going with the dialogue here. So the dialogue in this movie is so terrible, but also so hilarious. Like, for instance, like, well, something sure, he's been murdered and someone's responsible.
Yep.
That's no, the kind of luck. Quality police investigative work you can expect from Plan 9 and from Outer Space.
Well, like, I was going to say, the full quote is even better, because it's, Inspector Clay is dead, murdered, and somebody's responsible.
Okay. Yeah, like, between that and, like, the saucers are out there, the graveyard's over there, but I'll be safe locked up in there. Oh, okay. And then the whole, like, explode the sunlight here, explode the sunlight in the entire universe.
I will have a piece of dialogue to read later that I will ask one of you to participate in, because this is actually related to one of my dislikes, but we'll come to that later. Because you're right, the dialogue is hilarious.
It's so bad that it's hilarious.
Can I throw out my two favorite ones?
Yes, please.
As long as it's not the one I want.
Well, so both of them are from Eris, because he has all the best worst dialogue. And one of them is, the Earth people who can think are so frightened by those who cannot. The dead. That was amazing. That, and when he's arguing with the people about the weapon that... that'll be a dislike later for me. But you see, your stupid minds! Stupid! Stupid!
He says so, stupid, like, 15 times.
Rachel, I feel like you actually memorized the narration around Bela Lugosi leaving the house with the wife's roses in her cheeks. Could you please repeat that one?
Oh, just, okay, so it's because I copied some of my favorite quotes down. But there's, the ever-beautiful flower she had planted with her own hands became nothing more than the lost roses of her cheeks.
Oh, God. Dropped
the flower.
It's so bad. It's so dumb.
I love Chris Paul so much.
Like, the movie starts with his monologuing about the future, which will affect all of us at some point.
Wait. I got this one. I've got, because this is actually my favorite. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you. In the future. He's my spirit animal.
He's your spirit animal.
He is like my little soulmate from the 60s. Like, I just love it so much. It's terrible. And like, this fucking dialogue, Ed Wood, why?
Well, we'll come back to this later, I'm sure.
It's like Stephanie Meyer writes better dialogue than this.
Oh, wow. Like,
watching this, it makes me understand why people thought science fiction was trash.
Yeah. Because
if this is what you think of when you think of science fiction, of course you think science fiction is trash.
Yeah.
And there are B-50s movies which are much better than this. Forbidden Planet, This Island Earth. I mean, they're kind of cheesy in some of their ways, but they're not this terrible steaming pile that's Plan 9. They have some dialogue and some character.
Yeah, I mean, they are, like, This Island Earth is not a good movie, but it's better than Plan 9.
It's one of my guilty pleasures.
I enjoy the MST3K version of it. Because they did the MST3K.
I mean, it's got Russell Johnson in it, which makes it awesome.
All right, Paul. Well, let's get to your next like.
My next like is that this movie helped me appreciate the movie Ed Wood more. Because that movie really, just seeing Plan 9 again, and then recalling my memories of Ed Wood. Now I can see where Ed Wood was coming from. I can appreciate just how much Ed Wood captures the character and his inane, insane attempts to try to make filmmaking art. And he thought he was trying to make cinematic art and was making something great. And seeing Plan 9 again, I had seen it years ago on like Channel 11. Like, yeah, I could see the disconnect. I could see how Ed Wood, the movie, captures Ed Wood's grasping and failing of that basic concept. So it gave me more fuzzies thinking about a different movie. I know it's kind of meta in that way, but there you have it.
And it made me want to watch Ed Wood again because
I need to watch it again.
So I saw it when I was like a teenager, I think, and I haven't seen it since. And this made me want to go back and revisit that.
Well, alrighty then. Well, what about you, Rachel?
Okay, so I'm sorry, we're on dislikes again, right? Because it's hard to tell the difference. Oh, it's on likes? Okay, because it's so hard to tell the difference between the two, because they can all go both ways.
Yeah, I know, it kind of blends in this movie.
So, let's see. I'm going to say Zombie Tor Johnson not being able to get out of his grave.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Like, we're just going to do everything in one take. It's beautiful. Print and cut and print.
Yeah. To be fair, he's a zombie.
I mean, getting out of a grave is hard.
Well, and I realized that, you know, when he's like wandering around, like kind of like going like,
he's doing that.
What's a fucking grumpy cat?
I'm angry. A grumpy zombie.
Yes. So yes, it's magical and I love it.
That's what he looks like though. He just does this thing. He's just like the whole time.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
I can't even do it. I can't do it. Okay.
Watch, Rachel. Ready? Are you watching?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
Wow,
it's good, Sean, but it's not the level of, is his name Tor Johnson? Is that his name?
Yes, Tor Johnson.
Tor Johnson,
professional wrestler.
Yes, his facial expression is superhuman.
It's a superpower.
Well, as you know with impressions, Julia, that they're never exact, right? They're mockery.
Yours is good, but you're going to have to, like, beef it up. You're going to have to take some facial expression steroids in order to get to the level.
Well, I'm seeing a specialist next week about facial contortion.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Okay, that's good.
Good to know.
Yeah, it's very expensive. They're about $10 from a guy I found on Craigslist.
I mean, say what you will about Ed Wood, he really did know how to bring the talent.
Excellent director of actors. He was an acting director.
He might not have known how to direct the talent, but he brought the talent.
Sure.
Because you got Bela Lugosi, you got Tor Johnson, you got Vampira. What's not to like?
It's true.
Okay. Sure. Well, shall I go to my third like then? Because it's related.
Yes.
Yes.
So I actually love Tor Johnson as he's the police chief, right? He's the big yeah. So
he was the inspector, yeah.
He was actually kind of creepy. Yeah, yeah. He was kind of creepy as a zombie. I mean, I say kinda because nothing in this movie is actually scary, but he that face that he has, like with the white eyes, like is kind of creepy. You know, I could understand why somebody in like 1890 would find this terrifying, not in 1959, but you know.
But creepier or less creepy than the eyes in the movie we watched for Last Torture, The Omega Man.
It's hard to say because it's in black and white.
Is that a deal breaker for you?
No, it's just I don't feel like it's fair to compare color and black and white movies. I feel like it's fundamentally immoral.
And yet the Academy awarded The Artist with the Best Picture. And it was compared against a bunch of color movies.
Yeah, well, you know, the Academy is not exactly the most moral place. I mean, they gave Ben Affleck a few awards, so.
Oh,
burn on Affleck. Batfleck now. He's Batfleck for now on.
You know, he's a Boston boy, so you better watch out.
I feel like Ben Affleck in my neighborhood might come to you.
He probably could. And he probably has a posse. People with Boston accents who will kick your ass too.
I think there's a reason why he's actually Batman. It's because he's actually done that whole, like, he went to the League of Assassins and trained as an assassin, so he could probably snap my neck.
I mean, have you ever seen Reindeer Games?
I haven't.
You probably should never see that movie.
Disclaimer. Okay.
It's not genre, so it won't be on our church of cinema.
Yeah. Completely different genre.
Yeah, and then that is okay.
All right, so let's go to our third dislikes before we get to our skit. This is our last round. So, third dislike, Julia, go.
Okay, so the flip side to the dialogue being so bad it's funny is that it's so bad it's just bad in a lot of places. When it is not funny, it's just really, really boring, and you're also like, what? Why are they, what are they even talking about and why? And the narration is a lot like that, too. Like, the narration just got on my nerves all the damn time, because it was like, really? Really? You're going to narrate this, too? Okay. And, yeah, I don't know. That's just sad. It makes me sad, because it was bad.
That's right. Okay. I can't say I disagree with you.
No, I can't. Yeah, I agree that a lot of it's just.
I mean, I have it marked down, but I'm going to go for a different dislike.
Well, so, let's do all the dialogue ones. Let's get it done.
Okay, well, I do have it down. The dialogue, the wondrously bad dialogue is what I have written down, because as Julia pointed out, it's just painful. Going beyond the narrator, it the conversations are stilted, the interactions are wooden, it just, I could buy it out of the aliens, because they're aliens, but the aliens in some cases seem more human than the humans, but that's, I mean, it's kind of weirdly telling that Vampira doesn't have any dialogue, and she seems more human than some of the other characters, but.
Yeah, and like, they talk a lot about stuff that is not really necessary to the plot, whatever the plot actually is. There are a lot of really mundane conversations that just go on and on and on. Like before, the woman says the saucers are over there and the graveyard's over there, but I'll be locked in here. They have this like 5-minute conversation where he's like, I had an interesting day at work. And she's like, oh, really? Tell me about it. I've been hanging out at home. And then like he mentions flying saucers, but they talk a bunch about like her day at home for no reason.
And he's so just so matter of fact, oh, the government won't let me talk about it. It just seems so flatly, you think that this would be exciting to him and to her that he's seen a flying saucer, but no, it just is like, you might as well be discussing the quality of the milk that the milkman put on your doorstep.
Yeah, like, and the whole idea that he's like, there's trouble in the cemetery and there are flying saucers, so maybe you should go to your mom's. And she's like, nah, it'll be fine. Like, basically, I know there are zombies across the street, but whatevs. I'm going to just go to bed.
Yeah, it's like people don't act like this or talk like this.
So this is actually one of my dislikes, because people say utter some of the dumbest damn shit in this movie. And I really want one of you to act out a scene with me that I just posted in the group chat. So I need a volunteer.
Gotta look at the chat.
I'll do it. Who do you want to be?
I'll be the army guy because I'll just play him as a second dude. You can play Edwards, okay?
Okay.
So everyone just just ready for this. All right, so I'll be army guy. So here we go. Quite a sight, wasn't it, sir?
A sight I'd rather not be seeing.
Are you worried about them, sir?
Well, they must have a reason for their visits.
Visits? Well, that would indicate visitors. Are big guns a usual way of welcoming visitors?
We haven't always fired at them.
Oh?
For a time, we tried to contact them by radio, but no response. Then they attacked a town, a small town, I'll admit, but nevertheless a town of people, people who died.
I never heard about that, sir.
Remember that.
So not only
Rachel, you're putting too much into it. It's like, but nevertheless, a town of people.
People who died.
People who died.
So this movie has given us gems such as, well, they must have a reason for their visits, followed by visits. Well, that would indicate visitors. Really? Because I didn't know that's what the word visits actually meant. I thought that referred to, like, you know, chemotherapy or some random piece of information, or the endlessly joyful line of, but nevertheless a town of people. Because, as we all know, people don't live in towns usually. That's a very uncommon occurrence. What usually live in towns are insectile creatures, which share a hive mind but are not actually people, according to the government.
When I heard that line of dialogue, you know what I thought of? I thought of the bomb town in Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, which is a town, but it's not a town of people.
So it's just an empty town, but like it follows that with people who died.
Yes, people who died. But when he was saying it, I imagined Indy as he was wandering through that fake town before the nuclear test.
And I guess
that's not a town, but not a town of people.
And I guess the question I have is the stuff with the military guys taking place at the same time as the other stuff, or was there another town that was like destroyed?
I think
by
they're talking about
aliens.
They're talking about an event that happened before the events of this movie.
So what was that? Was that another thing with like weird zombie creatures?
The aliens, but they didn't enact Plan 9, so no.
No, it was Plan 12.
It was like Plan 25 or something.
Where they just killed people?
Yeah, they
destroyed that town. But I also went to the same place that Paul went to with the bomb test site in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And so I was imagining that he was differentiating it, you know, because basically in his world, half the towns are unpopulated bomb test sites and the other half of towns are inhabited by people. So he was saying, like, they attacked a town, a small town, but a town. And, you know, one of the ones has actually got people in it, too.
I imagine that's a useful distinction in the real world.
You have to actually like really work hard to make any of the dialogue in this movie make any sense.
Yeah, none of it makes sense. It's a completely nonsensical movie. So, Rachel, what was your third dislike?
Hey, we skipped over you, Rachel. Sorry about that.
That's okay. That's right. So my third dislike is, way to go, aliens, telling the humans about how there's this thing called Solarinite that can blow up everything, because it gets very confused, but at least at first they're like talking about the Solarinite and it's like the humans don't actually know about it and the aliens are just concerned that the humans are going to learn about it, so then they're like, by the way, there's a thing that can blow up stuff even better than what you're currently blowing things up with, and the humans are like, really? We want it! And then the aliens are like, why do you want it? It'll blow up all the sunlight in the universe, because that's how physics works.
They're stupid.
They're like the dumbest aliens ever. Like, basically, like, we're really worried about your using bombs, so we really, really want to make sure you don't use this even bigger bomb.
This is actually the one it likes. we'll save that for a fourth bike.
Like, how smart can you be when you live in a giant space nipple? But, I mean...
What can you be when you live in a giant space nipple? I gotta write that down.
Especially since they're humanoid, so they have presumably nipples. So do they just not have any concept of what a nipple is?
That might be one of the ways in which they differ from us, Sean. They might not be mammals.
Like Ken and Barbie? Like they just don't have nipples?
Yeah, I think they're just like straight up plastic under those suits.
How do they procreate?
Well, I don't know. They're aliens. Like, maybe the plastic just kind of, like, they eat a bunch and then it oozes and eventually they create mini versions of themselves.
Do you think Plan 2 was they were going to try to learn how to procreate with humanity?
Bits of their arms slowly scrape off and become small, tiny aliens that then they feed extra things to and they grow.
Oh, my God. That sounds horrifying.
That's very inventive.
Yeah. So
well, you know, if Ed Wood had had me around, we could have made a much weirder movie.
That's saying something.
Do you think that one of the plans, though, was actually to procreate with humanity?
I probably. Why not?
They
said they tried to work with these humans, but they were impossible to work with. So I wasn't sure if that was indicating, like, trying to talk to them or trying to possess them or what. But, like, whatever it wasn't working, and that's why they had to go the corpse route.
So far, we have three plans left to fill out, two by us and one by a listener. So we have procreating with humanity, Italian guys on scooters going, ciao, LARPing with a halberd, bad hair, bloody pumpkin, and then plan 9 is obviously zombies. So we need to fill out number 4 and number 6. So we're getting really close, guys. Good job. So, it looks like we're at that point where we have to do the skit. Yes, it will be on the other side of the skit, so we got to do this whole skit thing. So, are we ready to do it?
I am ready.
Yep, we'll do it.
We'll do it.
We'll do it.
So, just in case you didn't know, this skit was created by Samuel Becker, who is, a number of things I discovered. So there's a story here. One, he has been a longtime listener. And has sent us skits before, which we've never performed.
Samuel Becker, I think you're watching right now, and I just want to say that this is a toast to you for all the different skits that you've sent us.
He has done an excellent job. He sent us a skit as a joke when Paul and I, had a conversation about Megatron and Starscream opening up a pizza place in New York City.
I remember that.
So we have a skit from that, which is adorable.
Amazing.
Another one, but I can't remember which one that was. But I know he sent us another one.
But the Megatron and Starscream in a pizza place thing—that's like not even a skit. It's because the joke was that we wanted a pilot. We wanted a sitcom, and he wrote the entire like half-hour length pilot.
Yeah, he did like a full-on pilot. And if we could ever get the, you know, maybe Michael Bay to quit and give us the rights to Transformers, we'll actually produce it. But we'll see if that happens.
That would be more than meets the eye.
So I reached out to Sam, to Samuel, and asked him to write the skit for this. He said he's a big fan of bad movies from the olden days. So he wrote a skit called Assault of the Giant Moon Beavers. So this should be a lot of fun. The other interesting fact I found out is that Samuel used to be one of my students. And by some weird stroke of luck, we ended up crossing paths via the podcast. I don't know why, but somehow that happened. So it was really cool. So thanks, Samuel, for making this for us. I really appreciate it. And I hope people enjoy the skits.
Assault of the Giant Moon Beavers!
And the scene.
Scene one. In the depths of Wilfred Blair's scientific room, Blair works diligently on a satellite defense machine. His peers have mocked him, his parents have forsaken him, but it does not matter to Blair, because Blair has seen the future. Only he knows the horrifying truth. An invasion is coming, and only he can stop it. Wilfred's Girl Friday, or Saturday, or whatever, Girl Friday enters.
Blair, you must look up from your work every now and then.
Can't you see I'm working diligently, woman?
Oh, well, you know, a woman's only job is to check on her man.
But...
And make sure he has food.
But...
And has on a new set of clothes and underwear.
Really?
Are you wearing more than one-day-old underwear?
Spare me your misogynistic sarcasm, woman.
It's starting to feel like it. That's how you think of me, Blair. You've been living in my basement for about 2 months now.
So?
And you haven't paid rent.
Oh, So I'm supposed to pay rent in the basement of an astronomy place?
It's an observatory, and most people usually do when living here for 2 months.
Please, like astronomy has any scientific value. I can't tell what my personality is going to be from the stars.
That's astrology, nitwit.
Oh.
And besides, you think living in my lab exempts you from paying rent?
What is money, anyway? I mean, it's just pieces of colored paper we pass to and fro that actually has no meaning.
The meaning is I need some and you have none. Also, it's not all actually paper, it's fabric.
Really? It certainly feels like paper.
I'm going to refrain from asking the follow-up question there and just skip to the part where you tell me how that satellite is doing.
Horrid.
It wouldn't have anything to do with your zero experience making satellites, would it?
Psh, no. I have spoken with many people on how to make defense satellites.
Not including Dr. Spot.
Oh, that's not fair. Dr. Spot is one of the leading experts in the satellite design. Right, Doctor?
Bark, bark. He makes a great argument.
I knew you'd come around.
So how much has Dr. Spot helped on your satellite?
Given the fact he doesn't have thumbs, or fingers for that matter, not much.
Before the embarrassing discussion moves any further, a sensor goes off in Girl Friday's lab. What could it be?
Zoinks! It looks like a sensor's going off.
Go check it out, woman.
Let's see. Oh, my!
What? What?
It looks like a UFO has just crashed in a Nebraska cornfield a few miles from here.
Oh, God.
What?
I just remembered I sunk my entire savings in ethanol stock.
You what? When was this?
It is a startling realization and a situation that will only get worse. Trust me. Girl Friday, Blair, and Dr. Spot are off to find this fallen angel. Scene 2. Interior car. Night. Little do they know, another scientific team is after the ship, too. This team is made up of Brady Brewballer and his girl Thursday. It's Thursday, right? Teresa Brain. They don't need sensors. They were driving through the cornfields when they heard the incredible sound.
What on earth was that, Brady?
It's not from Earth, Reese. But don't worry about it. You know why? You know why? You know why?
Because you got this?
Because I've totally got this.
What do you think it was?
It was either a fallen Soviet satellite or a small alien baby. Which one do you want?
An alien baby?
Yeah, that would be so cool, right?
No, I think realistically it would be a Soviet satellite, not a childish fantasy.
Come on, don't you think raising an alien super baby would be fun?
Fun? Brady, you can't even raise a dog.
I'm sure babies are easier.
Just then, Girl Friday's car zooms past Teresa's, almost causing a tailspin.
That idiot!
Oh, please, Reese, don't go into road rage.
I'm going to teach that jerk a lesson.
Teresa swerves to get on the trail of Girl Friday's posse as Girl Friday tears toward the crashed UFO. It's a high-speed chase that would rival Bullet if you could see it, but you can't. So, scene 3. Exterior, crash site, night. Pow. Girl Friday's car plows through the Nebraska Supercorn and parks in front of a huge silver bullet. At least, that's what it looks like.
My God, it looks like a huge silver bullet.
No kidding.
Dr. Spot, your thoughts?
Bark, bark!
That's what I was thinking, too.
What did he say?
Given its dimensions and propulsion ports, this looks to have carried a huge being.
You know what's interesting? There are no scorch marks on the ship from breaking into the atmosphere.
Maybe it's stainless steel.
Blair, sometimes you're such a friggin'...
Pow! Teresa also tears through the supercorn, saddening even more ethanol stockholders. See what I told you about it getting worse? Raging, Teresa storms to Blair's group.
Could you please go easy around that corn?
Which one of you dingbats almost caused me to spin back there?
Reese, just cool it.
Cool it? We could have gotten caught in the supercorn.
I don't ever want to see those children again.
You have any idea how much trouble... What is that?
Bark, bark!
Precisely, Dr. Spot. A rocket from the depths of space.
Did he just talk like a dog?
Indeed.
Girl Friday, I think the good doctor has made a discovery. What kind of discovery? I just happen to be an atomic biology scientist, by the way. Wonderful. It appears that the trunk has been popped on this bad boy.
Spaceships have trunks?
No, silly woman. It's a figure of speech. It seems whatever creature piloted this thing left its front door open. Upon further examination of the size of this thing, this is a short-range vehicle.
Looks like it only holds one person. That makes sense.
But where could it have come from?
Bark! Bark!
My God, Doctor, you've found a sleeve for the tail in the pilot's chair. Fascinating.
I happen to be an expert in the study of wild beavers, and this sleeve looks like a giant beaver tail.
So there's a giant beaver running around?
That's kind of a bummer.
What?
Don't indulge him.
So you're the beaver expert. What do you think this thing will do next?
Well, beavers are inexplicably attracted to dancing, but the sight of it makes them go on a murderous rampage. There aren't any dancing competitions around here, are there? There is, isn't there?
Unfortunately for them and us, there is. Scene 4, interior soundstage, night.
Boom, 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 ba-doom. Boom, 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 boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom. Hey, gang! Welcome to this week's edition! We're inviting you all you infomercial watchers, tenants of your significant other's basements, and ethanol stockholders to join in on the dancing at home! Little does the predictably unexuberant crowd realize that a figure begins to lurk in the shadows. This next groove comes from your old pal Greg, reminding you that it could be worse. You could have been a producer on an Ed Wood film! What follows is a particularly uninspiring gyrating that I guess is technically dancing, but it is enough to bring the shadowed beaver into his murderous rampage mode.
Actually, we moon beavers are extremely intelligent and peaceful beings. The only thing I really want is to repair my damaged spacecraft with human entrails!
Blair and the gang arrive, too late to stop the horror.
My God, we arrived too late to stop the horror. And this is my favorite TV show.
Bark, bark!
It's so terrible.
Is there nothing we can do?
Nope. We have to let this play out.
Know this, humans, your fatal flaw. You just run around aimlessly during a crisis and don't exit a building in an orderly fashion. This will spell your doom.
Perhaps we should do that before he eats us.
Brilliant idea.
Scene 5. Interior science room. Night. Back in the Girl Friday scientific room, the group stands in silence. Perhaps they are contemplating a way to fight this unstoppable horror.
I was thinking about something. Being an atomic biologist, I often ponder the morality of the atom bomb. Why? Because the plot deems it necessary. Anyway, I was thinking, what if this moon beaver is just a warning to the powerful horror that is the bomb? What if, as a human race, we have reached our peak, like Bela Lugosi and Dracula? What if this moon beaver is here to warn us of our nature, that we destroy each other? It is human nature. The greatest inventions of our time were made so that we could destroy each other quicker and more effectively. Maybe we should just let it run its course, to once again balance the Earth like the meteor did with the dinosaurs millions of years ago.
In all of that nonsense, I heard the word bomb. You think a bomb could stop this thing?
But what about everything else I just...
Brody! Oh, sorry, that shouldn't be a woman.
Teresa, your voice has gotten much deeper.
Unbeknownst to everyone, Teresa had just taken her hormone shot.
Sorry. Brady, I appreciate your forced morality, but I have no intention of being eaten by a goddamn giant moon beaver.
I mean, geez, man, it's not like we're making solarinite. Fine, yes, a bomb could probably stop this thing, but we would have to lure it into a place where the damage would be minimal. Probably a cornfield. Whoa, no. I have a lot of money in ethanol. You're gonna have to find another place.
That's still you.
Oh, that's... so many lines. Okay.
Blue Baller was momentarily distracted by a light dancing across the ceiling.
Whoa. No. I have a lot of money in ethanol fuel, buddy. You're going to have to find another place. Oh, I just remembered. I do, too.
When did that happen?
That doesn't matter. What matters is that we have to find another place to detonate this thing. There's a nuclear power plant near the ship's crash site. Pretty sure there would be no problem detonating the bomb there.
You'll get no argument from me.
Me neither.
It's settled then. Now all I have to do is make a nuclear bomb. Wait a sec. What the hell is this? That's my defense satellite. Why? You're not supposed to stuff nuclear waste inside of a satellite. That's not what Dr. Spot said.
Does this mean we're all going to get cancer?
What? No, you only get cancer from smoking. This certainly speeds up my building process. Thanks for being an idiot, Dr. Blair. No prob. Wait, what?
As Brewballer puts the finishing touches on the death bomb, Teresa Brain and Girl Friday devise a plan to stop the raging moon beaver.
By now, it's probably rebuilt the ship, so we'll have to find some way to bring it back to the ground.
We could get some wood.
Wood?
Yeah, aren't beavers attracted to wood?
Dr. Blair, I would appreciate it if you didn't speak in this conversation again.
Sure.
How are we going to get that ship to land?
I got it. We blast modern country music under it. The ear-splitting noise will knock that thing out of the sky.
It's foolproof!
Brady, we need to upgrade your car's stereo.
Okay, why?
Better off if you didn't know.
Right.
Let's do this!
Scene 6, Exterior Road, Night. After all the boring stuff, and is it really boring? Is life ever boring? Is out of the way. The gang begins to hunt the beaver ship, which, strangely, is heading directly towards the power plant.
Is it heading directly towards the power plant? Strange.
Indeed. They track it through the night as it pierces through the sky, keeping a steady course for its imminent demise.
We just entered the safe detonation zone. Brady, on my mark, you jack that stereo up as high as it can go.
Gotcha, hun.
And Brady?
Yup.
Never call me that again.
I hope this works.
Me too. Looks like the ship is stopping.
Woof! Bark! Bark!
I concur, Doctor. Its ability to stop so easily is fantastic.
Okay, Brady, now!
Brady blasts the music as loud as the stereo can go, but while it attracts the now happy survivors of the Soul Train broadcast, it has no effect on the ship.
Oh, what now?
Ha! Huh. Do you honestly think this would stop me? It's better than most modern moon music. This next act is a warning, Earthlings. We will be watching.
Just then, the radio in the Moonbeaver ship glitches on, revealing the absolute worst thing since Paula Nancy Millstone Jennings of Sussex's poetry.
No, not again. I'm going down.
Reese, time to back up.
Already on it.
Quickly, the car backs up, until it reaches the blast's safe zone. Except there is no safe zone that close for a nuclear blast. A fierce white light flashes and blinds everyone in the car. Once the light fades away, they are all still blind, so they can't actually see the crater where most of the corn in the area used to be. Perhaps it's better that way.
Oh, God, I can't see. How can I finish my defense satellite?
I don't know which pain is worse, the one in my eyes or my ears bleeding from your shrieking.
Well, if we could see, I'm sure we'd all be standing in a line looking up at an object pensively.
Probably thinking about the impact the event will have on the entire world.
Or perhaps the director didn't have any other way to end it.
I don't understand. What's a director? Cue awkward narrator outro.
He called it, didn't he? I'm not actually sure what I'm supposed to say here. Eat your green vegetables? What was the political point of all of this? Say no to dancing? That can't be right. I'll figure it out one day, in the future, where we will all be spending the rest of our lives. Until then, goodbye.
Bam! We did it!
Yes!
Good job, guys. Good job. I'm sure Sam is very happy about us butchering some of his lines, but you know.
No, we creatively reinterpreted and had some audibles called there, especially by Rachel.
No, that was great. That was a lot of fun, guys. I appreciate that. So that was good. I got to be a moon beaver. So that's a first in my acting career. So.
Well, you can add it to your au revoir.
Actually,
your dramatis personae.
My dramatis persona. Great. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Sam. I really appreciate it. That was good times. That was good times. I'm sure Rachel actually appreciated this acting job this time. She liked that one.
Yes, that was much better because, yeah, the narrator is easy. You're just like, oh, I'm Criswell. It's good.
I'll keep that in mind for future skits. I will make you the snarky narrator in skits that I may have to write one day.
Just make me Criswell. I can do Criswell.
You can do Criswell.
Criswell. Awesome. The squirrel.
Alrighty. Well, that means it is time for our fourth likes, everybody, so we can put the show to an end before midnight. So, Julia, fourth like.
My fourth like is Vampyra, because Vampyra's like whole makeup and look was kind of awesome and very, very B-movie monster fun.
Oh, yeah. I completely agree with you. She didn't get any lines. And in the aforementioned Ed Wood movie, they talk about that. I don't know how true it is to real life, but in the movie Ed Wood, she basically said she'd do Plan 9 if she didn't have to do any lines. I have no idea if that was real or something made up for the movie. But she had that very stiffly on weird gait, but she looked good and she, her costume and her look actually worked well with the bad sets of the movie. She brightened up the screen every time she appeared. I was happy to see her.
Okay.
Yeah, when I said that Ed Wood could bring the talent, and when I said that meant Bela Lugosi, Tor Johnson, and Vampyra, I really meant it. Like, he didn't know what to do with that talent, but he could gather them.
He could put them in the same area. And then film them desperately trying to make sense of the garbage that he gave them for direction. It's true. It's true. All right, Paul, what about you? Fourth like.
I mentioned it before, so I'll put it out of here. The sheer incompetentness of the aliens in this movie charmed me throughout. The aliens just could not... I mean, their plan is bollocks. Okay, so... So if I understand their plan, they're trying to get the governments to acknowledge them so that then they can enter dialogue and not have the Earth create the Solonite bomb and blow up the universe. But it just, like, why don't they do something smart, like, say, land a flying saucer on the White House lawn? I think that will get you to acknowledge that aliens exist. Why do they ever think of that? And down towards the macro level, I mean, the humans defeat the aliens rather easily. They can't even control the inspector zombie properly. I mean, he nearly chokes the one alien. It's like the aliens are just like, my God, no wonder they're afraid of us. I mean, if this is the representative aliens out in the universe, the humans could kick their ass from here to Antares. If they're just so incompetent. They have more technology. It kind of reminds me of a Christopher Anvil novel where aliens not quite as intelligent as humans but with better technology conquer the Earth, and then Earth gets a hold of the technology and then decides to go conquering the universe with it. I mean, these aliens are dumb, stupid, and incompetent, and no wonder they're afraid of us. We're human. The humans are better in every way, and that's not saying a lot considering how weird off the humans are in this movie. But I was charmed how the aliens were so dumb and so hapless. There's a good word of the day, hapless.
So just to be clear, this is a like.
Yeah, this is a like. I mean, just watching the haplessness of the aliens. It's like, okay, so we're going to go with Plan 9. This goes back to one of the early likes. Okay, so you're picking this, like, what, this plan? Why? You've got at least 8 other plans, and none of them are better than raising a few zombies to do what?
So, my best guess for that was that they said these creatures are too hard to work with. So I was like, okay, so they're trying to possess living humans, and it's not working because they're too incompetent to do that. So maybe we'll be able to control the dead corpses, except even that doesn't actually work.
Right, because they nearly get choked by one. And then what are they going to do with these corpses? It's just like...
They didn't get that far. They're too dumb to get that far. Maybe we could control the corpses and profit.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly question. Anime corpses, question, profit. It's like, yeah, I was just immediately charmed at how incompetent these aliens are.
Well, I suspect we will be coming back to this point much later, Paul.
Well, we only have one more set of likes and dislikes, so it won't be that much later, but point taken.
Fair enough. All right, Rachel, what about you?
Did we skip Julia? We skipped Julia.
No, we didn't.
Julia's fourth like.
She said Vampira.
Oh, right. Okay, no way. Okay.
Yeah. I would just like, I mean, since Vampira's already been taken, I do just want to give a shout-out to her perfect eyebrows. But... My like also piggybacked onto the incompetent aliens, since apparently their flying saucers are made out of wood. they bought from the same flying saucer dealer actually as the guys from this island Earth, because their flying saucer burns down.
Yes, it does.
Like the Hindenburg. I don't even know. I loved it. It's so dumb.
Do we have that one on our list? Sean, this island.
Which one?
This island Earth. Do we have that on our torture list?
If we don't, you can put it on there when the show's over.
We should put that on the list because I think that would be fun to discuss.
Okay, go put it. You can put it on the list later.
Okay.
Yeah. You all have access to it. You can add stuff anytime you want, and anyone listening can certainly recommend movies to add to the list at any time they like.
That's how we wound up with things like Birdemic.
A couple exceptions being nothing with overly graphic violence, especially of a sexual variety.
Yeah.
We will do supernatural horror, but we won't do torture porn kind of stuff, and we certainly won't do like rape exploitation films. Absolutely not. But otherwise, anything's basically game as long as it's not, if it's not gloriously offensive. It's fine. So most things qualify, but we have to have a disclaimer. So yes, so you can add that to that. Perfect. So I guess should I go to my fourth? I should go to my fourth.
You should.
Yeah. So I think that this movie needs it's in dangerous need of a drinking game. I really do think that this movie could be a great drinking game, and I've come up with a couple of
rules. You would get so drunk so fast, like you'd die of alcohol poisoning.
There's a bunch of drinking games for it.
Are there really?
Oh, they exist? Oh,
yeah,
God.
Just Google Plan 9 drinking game.
Oh God, that's a problem.
Oh God. Well, I thought of a couple things that you could do. So every time someone doesn't run away from a monster, take a shot. That would work. Every time an alien spends more than 2 minutes explaining something that doesn't make any sense, take a shot. anytime a pilot doesn't touch anything that remotely resembles a steering column in an airplane, take a shot. Every time Bela Lugosi walks around like Dracula, take a shot. I feel like you could get pretty thrashed if you just followed those. No?
Yeah.
So let's all turn on the movie.
I feel like
we'll watch
you
5 minutes
die
of it, and we'll
if
see how many shots
those,
we take.
Sean.
That's why I say, you know, you could do it in spurts. You know, 5 minutes at a time. Well, anyway, that's my leg. Is just, I realized watching this that things repeated, and I just like you could make this movie fun in the same way that you could make something like Sons of Steel fun. Like, you know, anytime he spits up milk on his massive man boobs.
Mind you, you don't have to try to make Sons of Steel fun. It's just fun already.
That's true. It is already fun. I love that movie. That movie's so crazy. So, all right, let's jump to dislikes. Paul, your fourth go. Or, well, Julia, your fourth
Julia.
Go.
Julia.
So my fourth dislike is Vampyra not having any lines. And also, like, the fact that her waist is so tiny really kept messing with my head. Like, I kept wondering how it was physically possible. And it was scaring me. Because, like, it's literally, like, this wide.
It's true. Her waist did, like, there was that moment when you see her from behind and you see the waist. I was confused. There was a
like,
moment.
Like, how is she? Like, I think she doesn't have lines because maybe she can't actually talk because she can't, with that costume on, get air into her lungs.
It's possible.
Well, that's also probably why she walks in such a weird way, because she can't actually move her body.
In the Edward movie, she only do the movie if she couldn't. She didn't get lines because she did the movie reluctantly. But I wonder what the real life reason why. I mean, she nor Bela Lugosi have lines.
No, yeah, like, and I know Bela Lugosi doesn't because they had shot this silent footage where
right.
The Ghoul Goes West. And presumably they were going to shoot a lot more footage for that movie if it had actually been made, but it got scrapped. I guess I was very frustrated with the fact that the ghouls were kind of cool, like Tor Johnson and Bela Lugosi and Vampyra were all cool as undead people. But even though they made this like ridiculous story about the aliens reanimating corpses, why did the corpses they reanimate just happen to look like classic vampires?
Yes.
It's true.
It's a kawiki thing.
Like, it, everything about it, like, it's so confused. It's so confused. It's like Tor Johnson doesn't look like a vampire. He looks like a zombie. Right, like in the classic sense of what we expect. But then the others, like, they walk around like vampire people.
Yeah, no, and Bela Lugosi looks like a vampire because he's Bela Lugosi even before he becomes one.
Yeah.
But then, true. Like, he gets buried in Count Dracula's suit for some reason.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I mean, that was what was in his will. I mean, that's what's in mine.
You want to be buried as Dracula?
Yeah.
God, why wouldn't there be...
Your heart?
Was Bela Lugosi actually buried as Dracula in real life?
I would,
like,
think.
If I were Bela Lugosi, would that be in my will?
I would put that in my will if I were totally famous for being Dracula.
According to the Wikipedia,
Lugosi was buried wearing one of the Dracula cape costumes.
Costumes, yes. For the question.
Oh, that's nice. That makes me happy.
Amazing.
That's kind of cool. I was going to make a joke, but now I feel like that would be crass, so I won't.
Well, because that's what he did. That was who he was. He was the movie guy. He was the vampire.
Actually, if people are curious, for anyone who's listening, Stuff You Missed in History Class, which is a podcast, I forget where they're located from, but if you just Google it, you'll find it. They did a 2-part series on Bela Lugosi, on his life. So if you're at all interested in him, do go listen. It's a pretty good primer. And they obviously present in their show notes, they present, like, sources. You can go, like, look up the more extensive details. But his life was very interesting. Somewhat sad, but, you know, a lot of great, memorable people are. So, where are we? Are we on fourth like for Paul, or fourth dislike for Paul?
We are.
Go, Paul.
Okay, so my fourth dislike of this movie is, it was alluded to before, the complete lack of situational awareness on the part of the characters defies belief. I mean, how are the, like, for example, the cop and the woman in the car while the others are off in the graveyard, they don't notice that the inspector zombie's coming up at them? I mean, It's just again and again, it's just like things sneak up on each other, and there's absolutely no sense that the characters have any idea what's going on around them. I mean, it's like they all failed their perception plus awareness roles, and if this was a role-playing game, over and over again. It's just like, look around you, the zombie. I mean, how do you have a slow zombie sneak up on you? Really? It just defied belief. Really, really bad acting or really bad staging. But also it goes in with tying in with the stock footage and everything else.
I have an answer for that question, Paul.
Go ahead.
This town was actually an experiment for the government because, you know, at this time there was a big concern about alcohol consumption, and so most cities went dry at night. But this town was one in which they basically allowed you to serve alcohol at all hours of the day and night, and basically everyone in this movie is drunk.
That might explain some things.
I mean, like, really
alcohol
drunk.
Poisoning.
Yeah. So, it's fact. Look it up. It's on the Wikipedia page. If you don't believe me, you can Google
it. I don't believe you. I will Google later. I have a podcast to finish.
Okay. All right, Rachel, what about you?
We can't hear you, Rachel.
Ah, poop.
Yeah, poop is a great way to enter the podcast, yeah.
That's Shooting the Poo is a different podcast. That's one of our competitors' podcasts.
I'm trying to find this thing that I want. Sorry, I've got a long list.
Pick one.
Pick one. Go for it.
Okay, Criswell's hair.
Criswell's hair.
It's like a ski slope, a frozen moment in time. A hurricane could not move that thing. It's amazing. They're gonna take it off and they're gonna use it to shore up the levees in New Orleans the next time a hurricane comes through.
After you blow up the entire universe's supply of sunlight, it will still exist.
Yes. It is the Alpha and Omega. What we didn't actually know is that Criswell's hair is Plan 10 from outer space. It is made of pure unobtainium, alloyed with adamantium and vibranium.
We already said it was Plan 7.
Oh, did we?
Plan 7, yeah.
It's
only Plan 7.
It's awesome enough to be two plans.
Oh, it's awesome enough for two plans.
And then the head lice, like you know, use it like a ski jump.
Bad hair is plan number 7.
Okay, fine. It's amazing.
His hair is pretty astonishing. So,
it's astounding. Time is fleeting.
It's astounding. Yes. Just like
madness takes its soul. All
right, well, I guess I should go to my fourth. It'll be related to what Paul said, and it's mostly just a question. Which is a really simple question. Why does nobody run in this film? Nobody ever runs. They stand there and let these really slow-moving ghoul people... Like, one person runs. It's the wife, whose name I've forgotten.
And she runs into a cemetery. She runs out of the house and into a cemetery, which is probably the stupidest thing she possibly could have done. Let's see.
Hold on. That's not true. Because she's running.
No, yes, but... She already knows the cemetery is a creepy place. She has this creepy thing in her house. The bell goes. So where does she run? She runs into the cemetery. What logic is there in that?
She's drunk. Give her a break.
I don't think even drunk she'd be that stupid or crazy. I mean, there's a road right there. She winds up on the road. Why not run along the road till somebody drives by? Run into the cemetery. Yeah, that was smart.
Because it wouldn't serve the plot, Paul. That's really a real reason. They desperately need her to get captured by Tor Johnson, who's going to do the face. That's basically what
she didn't even get captured on that time. The guy in the car finds her. She gets captured later. She gets captured when they're going investigating the cemetery. This is when Bela Lugosi shows up at the house. And she runs out of the house, and she runs into the cemetery, runs out of the cemetery, and then the guy in the car finds her. And then foreshadowing my what? Foreshadowing my beer.
I hated so much. Like, every time a monster shows up, everyone just stands there, like I don't think in 1959 that when something scary came after you, you just stood there. I just feel like that was not a cultural norm.
Well, but Sean, you have to understand that this is important monster footage, and we want to make sure the monster is on screen as much as possible. So everybody just stop and make sure we get the monster filmed attacking you. Okay?
God.
I'm pretty sure that's the direction that was going on there.
Okay,
the important thing in this scene is that we get really good shots of Tor Johnson looking like a zombie, so make sure that you let him do that, guys. Stand still.
That makes a disturbing amount of sense, Julio, so I think you might be right.
All right, we got to go to our
next slide. That makes it better.
Does it make it better?
That's a possible explanation.
All right, Julia, give us your last like.
My last like is the flying saucers in this movie because they are so ridiculous. Oh, my God. And every single time they appear, they made me laugh.
Why do you do this to me?
Because they're so ridiculous. Like, what? Okay, Rachel has called them space breasts. They're like, they've been called hubcaps. They've been called, I don't know. But they're ridiculous. No matter what you call them, they're so silly. And I kind of love that.
I love them too. It's actually on my list. Because they're magical.
I dislike you people.
Come on, John.
They're so cheesy. It's wonderful.
They're too cheesy.
No, there's no such thing as too cheesy except that mausoleum.
No, look, okay. No. There is too cheesy, but then you transcend into the realm of enjoyable, which is Sons of Steel for, like, every line that the main character utters. That makes sense. But this is, like, just, like, 9 steps short of that cheesy enough.
Sean, would you say that they are, like, Cheetos dangerously cheesy?
Wow, we've got the snack foods.
Oh, God, I would kill for some Cheetos right now.
You have a car now, Sean.
Like my computer is sitting on top of a giant industrial size.
Oh, it's Utz! I remember Utz.
It's Utz. So as I mentioned, I got married recently and had a wedding reception. It was a picnic in a park. We got some industrial sized foods to feed people, and somehow the cheese balls got overlooked. So we have them at home now, and we are diligently munching our way through the
giant. How many cheese balls do you have?
We have 2 pounds, 3 ounces worth of cheese.
Oh my God, that's a lot of cheese balls. I know Boss is a big guy, but I don't think you can eat them that fast.
No, like this, we've been eating them as much as we can for like 2 weeks. Every meal is cheese balls, and we're not even halfway through this thing.
But it's Utz, and Utz is awesome. I miss the crab chips. You can't get Utz out here, and I miss, just like I miss yodels, I also miss.
So, Utz, like, crab. Do I need to send you a care package of East Coast snacks, Paul? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not hinting.
Would you like an industrial sized tub of cheese balls? Because I could give you half of one.
No, I prefer the crab chips. But East Coast snacks are awesome, and I miss them. Which is completely irrelevant to this podcast, but. There you are.
Anyway, flying saucers, dangerously cheesy, like this tub of cheese balls.
Cheese balls.
And I'm guessing, Rachel, that was also your last like. Yeah. Yes? Was it?
Yeah, it was fifth. What's that?
I thought my like was Criswell's hair. Or did I just get completely lost?
No, this is the fifth like, the last one.
The last like. Oh, okay.
Was your last was like?
Okay, it works.
Is that your last like, the flying saucers?
No. My last like is the hilariously inept police.
They're so bad.
But someone is responsible, you have to admit.
It's true. I mean, it is an inescapable conclusion.
Well, that's true. The police are very confused in this movie.
Like the aliens that way.
Like, I love when the police chief is like, I'm gonna go off into the dark, and that's okay. And they're like, but it's dark. He's like, I'm a big guy. I'll be fine. No biggie. And then he goes up and he gets like killed, and like everyone's like, well, the cemetery's weird, so let's go out alone. Like, it's just like, why does this town not have more police? And when police officers start disappearing, why are they not calling like other people?
Like the National Guard or something. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, you'd think, but no. No.
But no.
Because as you know, in the police procedure handbook in 1959, it said always walk alone in the dark in a cemetery.
Well, and you have to remember that the nearest town that they might call to for backup is actually a bomb test site with no people in it.
That's right.
That's right.
So they can call, like, the policeman mannequins who will animate after dark.
Wouldn't that be cool, though, if, like, a bunch of, like,
that's plan
showed
six
up?
Is actually getting mannequins to animate.
There we go.
Yeah, Autumn style.
Animating mannequins.
Yeah.
With an 80s montage.
Exactly.
Oh, animating mannequins with an 80s montage.
Yes. Yes. Oh, God, we've just gone back to mannequin.
Like mannequin.
That's exactly what we went back to. Oh, God, help us.
We got one more left, guys. All right, well,
we skipped over my last like. I got a bunch of them. I don't know which one to pick. Okay, I'll pick one that, again, that transcends the movie. This movie reminded me of a novel with a not a similar plot, but elements almost lifted from this. Have any of you read Peter Hamilton's Night Dawns trilogy?
Nope.
Everyone's shaking their heads. Anyway, it's set in the far future. Humans have colonized planets, and, well, they have contact with alien races, and then a contact with a extra-dimensional alien race goes wrong, and, well, corpses start animating. People from beyond the dead, from the land of the dead, start coming into life again. So that kind of, watching this, I was thinking of that. It's like, hey, the dead are coming back to life, and aliens are involved. And I need to reread this trilogy sometime. So, yay. I mean, granted, there was no Al Capone or any of the other interesting dead in coming back to life. It was just the Inspector and Bela Lugosi and Vampira, none of which had any lines. But still, Peter F. Hamilton's Night Dawn's trilogy. I recommend that to any and all listeners. So there you are.
You're saying is that Plan 9 from Outer Space would have been more awesome if one of the people resurrected was like Abe Lincoln.
Or Al Capone or something like that, yes.
But I can't believe what you basically just said was that Vampira, Tor Johnson, and Bela Lugosi aren't interesting.
They are, but they don't have any lines.
Yes, that is a sad fact.
Well, whereas the characters in the Night Dawn trilogy, they have lines, they have agency, they do stuff. Here, the three actors don't have any lines, which has been knocked as a dislike before, so which really hurts in my comparison to this movie. If Vampira had lines, this movie might get a higher grade for me, but she doesn't, alas.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, okay. I guess I should go with my last like.
Yep. You should.
I should, but... I will just say that while I appreciate this film's efforts to represent airplanes in a completely believable fashion...
What? Wait, what?
Hold on. Let me finish my sentence, y'all.
Okay.
So while I appreciate the film's attempts to represent planes in a completely believable fashion, it is the fact that most of this movie takes place in a cemetery... which, while easy, at least gives this film some hope that it could be creepy, because there are no cemeteries that are anything other than creepy at night. It's fact.
Even when the mausoleums have cardboard doors.
Don't care. Even a cardboard, like if it was a cemetery where everything was made out of cardboard, still be creepy. All cemeteries are creepy. Like, even in day, cemeteries are creepy, but they're super creepy at night. It's because there are, like, ghosts and stuff.
I lived behind a cemetery. It wasn't creepy, day or night. It was relatively mundane.
How do you lived there and you didn't come from there?
You don't know that for sure, but I used to live on Evergreen Street, which bordered Ocean View Cemetery. It was bordered our backyard, and we played laser tag in there. I cut through that cemetery to get to the train and get to work. I sometimes had to dodge the people running the cemetery because we weren't supposed to do that. But it was a nice shortcut to actually get to the street. So yeah.
You weren't supposed to like cut through it to get to the train.
My backyard bordered an edge of the cemetery, and to get to the train, I would cut through the backyard into the cemetery, walk out of the cemetery's front gates, and go down to the train, or go through the side gates to go to the train. And that, well, especially doing this after dark or not during cemetery hours, was kind of illegal.
But playing laser tag, I bet, was totally cool.
That, yes, in a cemetery,
and,
yes.
No one minded.
No, we only once had a car start with its lights patrol around, and while we all just hid and waited for it to go away, and then we went back to playing laser tag.
I love the idea of Paul like hiding in a cemetery with laser tag guns.
Like Paul is secretly like Giles and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where you learn like his past. His name was actually Ripper, and he was super dangerous.
I told you some of my story during LongCon, during our gigantic long walk.
Obviously not enough.
Obviously not everything, but I told you some of it then. But here's more now.
You didn't tell me you were the successful pet cemetery case.
Suddenly it all makes so much sense.
Oh, God. I know, right? Like Paul is a reanimated child from the cemetery, which explains his affinity for cemeteries and why he plays laser tag there in his free time.
And yet I don't read much ghost or horror fiction.
That's because it's too close to home.
Maybe.
Paul. All right. Yeah, so I think we've got it. We got our last dislikes now. We should note that Samuel has said that the acting in the sketch was better than any Edwin film ever made.
That's a low bar.
High bar.
To be fair, I think we're mostly just slightly above mediocre.
To be fair, I think Samuel Beckett's dialogue was better than the dialogue in any Edwin film ever made.
Also, well, that's also true because his dialogue was deliberately self-aware. So, but in any case, last dislike, Julia, go, while my cat bites my toe.
Okay, as much as there were elements of this movie that filled me with glee, the ridiculous flying saucers, and Vampire and Bela Lugosi and Tor Johnson, and the whole, like, we actually did try to somehow make it work so that the aliens and the vampire zombie people would sort of somehow make sense to be in the same movie thing, this movie's plot, what even is that? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And the more you try to poke at it, the less it makes sense. There's just like, why do Vampira and Bela Lugosi look like Dracula and the Bride of Dracula? What the hell is going on? Why are the aliens resurrecting only three humans? Why are they so dumb? What is even happening here? Why does nobody seem to care that UFOs have apparently destroyed a small town full of people before? Like, the government certainly doesn't seem to care about that. The aliens are just leaving voicemail, and they're like, yeah, we're just not going to answer and hope they don't destroy another five towns. None of the movie makes any sense at all. Multiple points, conversations happen that you'd think, like, they could have a chance to make things make more sense, but they don't, and instead they talk about, like, how instead they're going to go investigate alone in the dark for some reason, which is, like, also not making any sense. Just nothing anyone does in this movie makes any sense.
That happens to also be my final dislike, Julia.
But take it away.
So, like, immediately when I started watching this and the supposed plot started coming out, I realized this is like a poor man's The Day the Earth Stood Still, because the plot vaguely resembles it as soon as the aliens start explaining why they're doing what they're doing, like they're afraid they're going to be all bad or whatever. And so that's basically just The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is from 1951, which is a much better film. But like, none of it makes sense why they need to go to these extremes. So like, for example, we learn that they're here because they want to stop us from blowing up the universe, but they're upset because the government doesn't listen to them and won't acknowledge that they exist. Which isn't quite true, because we know that the government actually acknowledges that it exists, but whatever. But the thing is it's very clear that they're not actually they don't have any actual difficulty with communicating in a clear and relatively concise fashion, let alone in presenting themselves in a fashion that would not be alarming to other human beings. So it makes no sense to me why they wouldn't just like fly their spaceship down one day, land, and be like, what up, y'all? We're here. We're going to have a conversation. Because clearly the military's initial response was not actually to blow them up, was like actually to send them radio messages. But why don't the aliens understand what radio message is? That's never explained. So that's one part. So they make zombies to kill us, even though they clearly have the means to do far more damage without reanimating bodies, because this is a spacefaring species who would just come from some vaguely long distance. So in any case, when they finally do get in touch with us, they decide that instead of doing, hey, let's explain the dealio and have a reasonable conversation about the problems and find a solution, their response is to like call us stupid every 5 seconds and are surprised when humans respond with like, well, fuck you, dude, and like punch you in the face. So like none of this makes any sense.
Yeah, why don't they try contacting different Earth governments? Okay, so
I think that maybe the aliens are teenagers.
Well, then that makes them hypocrites.
No, like, think about it. They try to talk to the adults, and they're like, hey, man, don't blow up the world. Nobody answers. So what do? They have to just, like, attack them to get them to even notice.
So it's teenage rebellion?
It totally sucks being a teenage alien.
I was a teenage alien. That sounds like the next YA novel.
Also much more interesting than this movie.
Oh, wait, it's been done. It's called Roswell. Sorry.
True. All right, Paul. Why don't you give us your last?
Okay, I could go with that, but I have one more. And it actually ties in slightly what I was saying before. The problem with this movie is that the situation is not resolved. So we stop this alien spacecraft, and it goes burning and blowing up, and those two aliens die. But the Earth is still under threat from that awesome guy that Rachel likes. I mean, he's got plenty of other ships. I mean, he took away two of them from these two incompetent clowns that couldn't get going. I mean, the aliens could come back and do other things anytime they want. They could blow up entire towns again. They could destroy the do anything what? I mean, the initial problem isn't resolved. I mean, unlike, say, this island Earth, where the alien threat is neutralized, the alien threat, I mean, this one saucer is neutralized, but the threat to Earth is still sitting there. What the hell is, and there's really no defenses or any preparation for what when the aliens come back. It's just like their sheer incompetence is the only reason why they were stopped this time, is that you can't count on that every time. So, yeah, it's kind of like a dangling, but even the narrator seems to be convinced that something's going to happen in the future. So, yeah, it's kind of an unsatisfying ending that way.
Yeah, that's true. They blow up at the end, and then that's it.
Wait, and there's plenty more aliens out there. Wait, there's at least two other alien spacecraft.
Yeah, like that particular set of aliens blows up in the end. But Paul is right. They could attack another town full of people. People who could die.
People who could die, exactly, Julia. Not one of the ghost towns, a town with real people.
Ah, ghost towns. Ah, those beautiful places. All right. Rachel, you've got the honors of being the end of our dislikes.
I mean, I feel like you guys did kind of like the big summary dislike, and I don't really have my own. So I'll just read you this one kind of as I wrote it, which is, in a movie replete with fucking horrible acting and incoherent dialogue, Tor Johnson stands out as particularly incomprehensible. Yeah. I mean, he had his beautiful moment where he couldn't get out of the grave, but other than that, I'm really
sure that's why. Oh, God.
When he talks his lines, I was going to make that a dislike, but I felt like it was rude to mention the fact that, like, when he speaks, it sounds like he's, like, preparing for winter and he's packing away stuff in his cheeks.
Because
that's how he talks. He's like, you know, like, it's very confused. So... yeah.
I mean, I don't feel like it's that mean to complain about it, considering that actors are supposed to enunciate so you can understand what they're saying. Now, I'm sure what he was saying was not any good at all, but it would have been nice to know, because some of the dialogue in this movie was fucking hilarious, and his is forever lost to the sands of time, because you can't understand what he's saying.
For all we know, it's the best dialogue in the whole movie.
It probably is! So I'm disappointed in that.
What would be
even
weirder?
Johnson holds the key to everything in this movie.
If his
could
line...
just understand through the...
the movie would have made sense.
To be fair, you can find the full script, so you can know what he meant to say.
Don't do that. Don't take away the magic.
No, because what you don't know is that he was actually really good at improv. But now it's forever lost.
Right, right. Tor Johnson, yeah. The greatest improviser ever.
Lost.
Lost to the sands of time.
Forever gone.
Oh, sadness. All right, guys. Well, we made it through 5 likes, 5 dislikes. Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is amazing. It
sure is.
So, I would like to take a moment out of your day to explain how we might make this movie better.
Oh, dear.
You ready?
God save us all.
God save... Hey, it's not that
right,
bad.
Write a new fucking script.
Well, I was going to do that. So, so here's how I would improve this movie. Ready?
Ready.
All right, so first you turn it into a sitcom-style hour-long comedy, right? Which makes pointed jokes about common tropes in classic 1950s science fiction and classic horror films. Think of it as sort of like a TV-ready version of Shaun of the Dead, but like crossed with Hitchhiker's Guide. Right. So that way, when we have the bad dialogue, it's actually intentional, instead of not. Seth Rogen's going to be the pilot, which is going to explain why he never touches the actual steering column because he's so high all the time. Michael Myers is going to be playing the main alien dude, and he'll be basically a cross between his Dr. Evil impression and the guy from Wayne's World. Amy Poehler will be Tana, who is the female alien, only she'll have better dialogue, mostly in the form of puns, because why not? The pilot's wife would be played by Tina Fey, but she would be a secret zombie vampire warrior, so that would be kind of the secret thing.
Secret zombie vampire warrior?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're like zombie vampires, so she has to learn how to fight both. Right? It's okay. Important. She diversifies.
Oh, so she's like a slayer. She's not a zombie and a vampire. Who
okay, that's what I was just confused by that.
So oh, like, no. Yeah, she fights zombies and
anti-zombie vampire warrior.
Okay. Right. But her husband doesn't know about it because he's high. So... it would make sense.
See, that would make a lot more sense for her to be like, I'm going to be fine locked in the house across from the cemetery.
And then she, like, opens that secret panel in her wall, and it's, like, axes and stuff. And, yeah, she goes out, and she, like, cuts off Tor Johnson's head and, like, wears it as a hat. Yeah.
I was with you until, like, beheadings and wearing heads as hats. I don't think I want to see that movie, actually.
I actually have a story about that. This is great.
Okay, I don't think I want to hear that.
You're welcome. I'm going to read that at World Fantasy Con, I think. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, I'm not going to be at World Fantasy, so I'll miss that.
I'll record it and have it broadcast in all of Boston. So, in any case, other thing, every member of the police would be played by Simon Pegg, but would be doing different characters. So, but they would be unaware that they all strangely look alike, although the other characters would acknowledge they do. And it would be one of those secrets that's never explained. It would be like some sort of like, like one of those mysteries of a story. Like, why do they never ever notice? And then there'd be like fan commentary online, and like Tumblr would go for like months. It'd be great, right? The evil alien master would be played by reincarnated Peter Lorre, while the colonel of the
excellent
would be played by Jeremy Irons. And then all the remaining minor characters would be played by a sequence of forgotten SNL and Mad TV stars.
That could actually improve this movie.
Right? Right? This movie would be good.
I don't think it would take much to improve this movie.
That's true. But that's how I would improve it. So good. All right. So we have one thing to do before we give our grades and we close this out, which is we need to know what plan four is.
Plan four.
What's plan four?
Hey, plan four is that the aliens get turned up.
Get turned up?
Yeah.
Is that like
what are you, not like with the slang? You work at a university.
I don't understand what half those kids are saying.
Their eyebrows are on fleek. That's apparently a new one. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, it just basically means get drunk, you know, go party. The aliens are like, fuck this shit. The Earth is going to destroy the universe. Might as well drink.
So the aliens are turn up?
Turnt.
Turnt.
I got turnt.
And they have amazing eyebrows. Like, well-groomed.
And have amazing eyebrows.
Yep.
Their eyebrows are on fleek.
On what?
On fleek! F-L-E-E-K! On fleek!
This will go down in history as the torture cinema episode where Sean shows that he is so not a young person who is hip.
Well, we're all goddamn old farts.
Oh, we're totally young and hip and with it, Rachel.
On fleek, baby.
I'm sure that the children listening to this, so many children, so many hipster children listening to this, will like think that I am very much with their slang. I took a web quiz that told me that I'm like 89% knowing what youth slang today is, so clearly
just the fact that you talk about it like that just indicates how not in touch with this generation we are. I'm with the slang.
The youth slang. It's very important. What, you don't think I sound like a valid member of the youth?
No, not anymore. No, I'm sorry.
He's like over in the corner in the other room. He's just like cracking up at me right now.
That's good. Hi, Moss.
I remember when a bunch
they
of
all
my...
say hi. He says hi.
Aw. I remember when I had a bunch of reviews in which... what did they say that... I can't remember what it was now. Never mind. I was going to be funny because I couldn't figure out what it was they meant to say, and I didn't know what it meant. Yeah, but in any case. We also have a question, which came from Samuel. Samuel wants to know, did anyone else notice that the priest was the old man's wife's burial? From the old man's wife's burial, never actually read from the Bible he was staring blankly at.
It's true.
Also, we have a suggestion for Plan 4 from listener Trish. Trish says, Plan 4, interpretive dance. Does anyone want to try to interpret that in the dance?
Hey, I got an idea.
I think Sean should do it. Sean, you want to do an interpretive dance?
Of what?
Plan 4, what the aliens would do, obviously.
You want me to get up and do a dance?
Yes.
Interpretive dance, yeah.
All right, let me mute my mic so it doesn't make noise. I'll get up and dance, okay?
This is why, listeners, I'm glad I don't have a webcam. I can't be asked to do this.
Okay, so Sean's interpretive dance is like moving one arm up in the air and then moving the other arm up in the air.
Yeah, that's basically all I can do, yeah.
I can't say I would have anything better, Sean, so don't worry.
I also don't have any room. Otherwise, I would do the crab walk.
You do look like you're in danger of being entirely surrounded by stacks of books that might eventually eat you.
Yeah, there's stacks back there. Yeah, it's true. So, I got an idea. Why don't we combine all three of their suggestions into one? So, animating sinister sinks to do interpretive dance in order to obliterate the Earth.
Wait, so the sinks have to dance?
Yeah, the sinks do interpretive dance in order to obliterate the Earth.
Is this sort of like the dark side of Beauty and the Beast?
Yes.
Where you have the enchanted castle full of plumbing dances in order to stop us from bombing the sun?
Yeah.
Yes.
You followed that relatively well there, Julia.
The good news is...
I'm just trying to figure out how that works.
But what you just said makes more sense than this actual movie.
That's not much. So, saying much.
It's saying a lot because you just managed to turn something interesting. Okay, well, in any case, we need to wind down so we can be done before midnight.
Yeah, we're getting close there. So
just so everybody knows, here are all of the plans since this is Plan 9 from Outer Space. There were a total of 9 plans, but we never learned about the other 8. So Plan 1 was animating sinks to do interpretive dance to obliterate the Earth. Good job, guys. Plan 2 was procreating with humanity. Plan 3 was Italian guys on scooters going, ciao, right? Only Italian-like because I can't do ciao like an Italian person.
Oh, my God.
Plan four was the aliens are turned up and their eyebrows are fleek.
On fleek.
On fleek.
We are masters of the youth slang, everyone.
I am down with the hizzy. Yeah. Oh my god. That's like 15 years too old now, I think. So, plan five was LARPing with a halberd, which is good. I don't know how that one worked. It probably didn't go well. Plan six was animating mannequins with an 80s montage, which that's solid. That's a solid one. Plan seven was bad hair. Plan eight, the bloody pumpkin, which was the drink I have consumed tonight. And obviously plan nine was zombies. So, good job, guys. Those are all of the plans. So why don't we get down to our grades? So, Julia, what would you grade this movie?
Okay, so I genuinely laughed a lot, but this movie was also genuinely terrible. But I think I kind of enjoyed it more than a lot of other movies that I've had to watch for torture cinema, so I feel like I have to give it a D.
Fair grade.
It's terrible, but it's also kind of enjoyable.
Okay, all right, fair enough. What a... Paul?
Paul gives it a sneeze.
Sorry about that. Well, I'm glad you got Julia to go first after some of the grading on previous torture cinemas on my part. I thought hard about this because, well, I didn't want to give this an incorrect grade because you know how I obsess about this sort of thing. And so I compared this to my grade on Birdemic. It's better than Birdemic, but not as good as some other things. I'm going to give it a D minus.
D minus for you. Fair enough.
D minus.
All right. What about you, Rachel?
Well, I love this movie because it is horrible. And so it is that sort of weird thing where, you know, I couldn't give it an F because, say, I would rather watch this movie any day of the week than, say, something that was directed or produced by Michael Bay.
Exactly. It has to get higher scores than Transformers.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you know, on the scale of sexist movie sexism, this is actually less sexist than a Michael Bay film.
God help us.
I mean, there's no upskirt.
Exactly. There's no blowjob jokes or Romeo and Juliet laws or anything like that. So I think I'm going to have to go with... I'd give it a D, except I fucking love it so much because it's just so bad, so it gets a D+.
Oh,
that
God,
is totally
guys...
fair. What did I give Birdemic? I feel like I gave Birdemic a pretty great grade. Cause
I
really
like an A-.
I enjoyed Birdemic.
I hate that movie so much.
I'll look it up right now. Okay, Birdemic. Okay, Sean gave it a Q. I gave it an F. And Julia, you gave Birdemic a C.
Yeah, see, because I enjoyed Birdemic. It was good times.
Julia, was it just fine?
It looked fine.
It's fine.
Listeners, if you don't know what we're talking about, please look up our torture cinema about Birdemic.
Without Birdemic, I would not know that song about hanging out with my family, having ourselves a party.
Oh, God, stop. No more. Okay, let me grade this stupid movie so we can end this. So I'm just... it's bad. I mean, sure, it's more enjoyable than Transformers 2, but it's still, like, the production values are just fucking horrid. The dialogue is terrible. I can't stand watching zombies walking around at, like, the pace of a snail and having people just stand there for no good reason. Like, it's just, I just give it an F. I can't do anything better than that. So.
That is also fair.
So, I think, I'll figure out what the average is because I can't do math in my head right now.
Let's see. See, we have a D+, a D, a D-, and an F, right?
F+-ish. It's an F. Between an F+ and a D-.
No, it's an F+.
So, no, it's actually, I think it would be fair to put it at an F- since everybody else gave a D something, so.
You mean a D minus.
D minus, sorry, yeah, sorry. No, yes, F minus, no. All right, guys, well, on that note, so thanks everybody who's watched today. I really appreciate it. If you didn't get a chance to watch and you're listening to this on the MP3 file, there is going to be in the show notes, I'll make sure there's a link to the video if you want to watch us being silly. Other than that...
Wait. Awesome. I also just saw a comment from an Andrew. A bath in liquid tungsten is more enjoyable than Transformers 2.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Is that a reference
which reminds me of Doorway to the Hidden World by our friend Kevin Lux and Stan Tung's Tungsten Stand commercial.
Yes.
Stand strong, stand tung. Stand tungsten. Stand
strong. I blame Julia for hooking me up to this podcast.
I love that podcast.
Jeffrey told me that Kevin told him that in November he's going to answer all the questions we brought up about the CDU.
Good. Good. Because the CDU, I mean, that's a shady organization that really needs to have everything laid out. He also needs to explain the connection to Jimmy Carter. So.
I hear that Kevin is planning to answer the questions. I don't know what that means. I don't know Kevin. But, yeah, apparently that's going to happen.
Does anyone know Kevin? Does even Jeffrey know Kevin?
Jeffrey knows Kevin. I gather that Kevin did something to save Jeffrey at some point in the past, and Jeffrey does not want to talk about that ever.
Supposedly Kevin followed me into a bathroom at a convention once.
Oh, God. That's so creepy.
that's a very weird outro.
He left a note in my bag while I was going to the restroom.
Oh,
so.
My God.
Oh, my God. That sounds so Kevin, though.
It does sound very Kevin. Yeah.
Now I'm imagining the sitcom That's So Kevin.
All right. We got to close this monstrosity out. So thanks, everybody, who watched the live feed. Thanks for those who are listening on the regular thingy. This is our Halloween special, so we did Plan 9 from Outer Space, which is awesome to do. November will be a regular one, but do look out for a poll for the Christmas special, in which we will be putting up many terrible Christmas movies to watch, although that is getting a little bit thin since we have already covered the Star Wars holiday special.
Did you guys do Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium?
Is that a Christmas
movie?
Oh,
God, yes. Well, yeah, okay. It'll
be on the list. It'll be on the list that I'll randomize
Julia,
from.
I hate you.
All right, well,
I sincerely apologize.
All right, well, thank you, Julia, for joining me tonight.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome.
And thanks, Rachel.
You're welcome, citizen. You're welcome.
And on that note,
awkward ending.
And scene.
Stay frosty.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I pass in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.